So, Madam Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
I will, Mr. Mayor. Jim Sykes.
Here.
Matthew Beck.
Here.
Ron Arvin will not be present. Steve Culligan.
Here.
Dan Mayfield.
Here.
Jim Culver is expected around 7 o'clock. Vern Halter.
Here.
You do have a quorum, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. That's right. I've asked Sabrina Holland to lead us in the pledge. Oh, excuse me. We've got to do the agenda first. Sorry for the false start. So we do have a few things. The clerk has suggested that we can efficiently put Ordinance 3 and 4 together and Ordinances 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. It saves a lot of time. It gives everybody still a chance to participate. And, Mr. Manager, you had a comment on the agenda.
Yes, I have a few. When it comes to unfinished business A regarding Wasilla Lakes Fire Service Area, I'm going to request an amendment to that ordinance. Also, under public hearings number one, there has been a request from CoAlaska, the applicant, to postpone this until February. And then on number five, ordinance serial number 14-144, received a call late this afternoon from Assemblymember Arvin asking us to be held over until the next meeting so he can have a chance to participate. He is on a flight back home and wasn't able to call in telephonically. That would be number five, 14-144. And this is the electrical generation facility or power plant ordinance.
Assemblymember Culligan.
Yes, through the mayor. So you're proposing that we have a public hearing tonight and then?
Our intent is to conduct all the public hearings. They've been advertised.
Okay, thank you.
Assemblymember Sykes.
If we're going to pull Ordinance 14-129, the CoAlaska Ordinance, I think that we're expecting there's going to be some suggestions on procedures for agricultural lands, and I would move to delay that until April 1st rather than February 1st.
That would be more appropriate later, according to the clerk, after the public hearing.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. We're still going to have a public hearing.
Okay.
I see no other. So are there any objections to the agenda as tampered with? So, Dr. Holland, please lead us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So we have a series of minutes here, starting with October 14th, October 21st, two of them on the 21st, the 28th, two of them on the 28th. Any comments? No objections. Those will be accepted. We now have reports from cities. Is Palmer here? There's the Alaska Municipal League has kind of sucked everything out. Because I know is anybody here from Wasilla? Because I know both the mayor, deputy mayor from Wasilla are there. Anybody from Houston? No. School district? No. Moving along. Joint school board committee issues. Assemblymember Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm happy to report that at our last meeting, a report was given and all the projects are on date according to schedule and outlined. Also, recently they've done a They have a subcommittee that's done a survey that they're currently compiling the results, and they're looking at the option of two different school schedules, one which starts a little bit earlier than August, even earlier than we have in the past couple of years, and another schedule that starts right after Labor Day, and they've taken a lot of input. They initially did a survey on the school schedule, which helped them to devise these two possible schedules, and over 1,500 people replied from the community with regards to what their recommendations were. And so this is a pretty daunting task, but I commend the district and that subcommittee for doing that. Thank you.
Thank you. The subcommittee on transportation with Anchorage, you want to report on that, Assemblymember Colligan? We did have a joint meeting.
So the Transportation Committee has not met. I requested that we had a joint borough and municipal assembly meeting or a work session. I'm not sure quite we had during that discussion. I think it's important that we discuss the difference of the two forms of government we have and how we report and schedule meetings. As we've been told before, how we notice meetings and how they notice meetings and how we have quorums, et cetera, is difficult. But during the transportation meetings, there was plenty of information coming forward that I felt needed to come before our entire assembly. And I still think when it comes to their transportation plan, their redesign of some of their bus hubs and other stuff, I think that's something their people mover presentation needs to come in front of our assembly. Maybe we can invite them out. I thought the meeting went well overall. There was some things discussed that I think put out on the table. We'll call it an engaging conversation that we need to discuss between the two bodies without a brawl, but just kind of express both of our difference of interest when it comes to the bridge, when it comes to the roads. Assemblymember Domboski had asked us one of their transportation priorities. If you drive into town, you'll see all the dirt work going on at the Eagle River Hill, the bridge. That's only half funded. It is probably a very important project to be completed as far as getting traffic. I drive that road at least 3 days a week back and forth during work hours, and that is the bottleneck coming out to the valley most all the time. And so they've asked us to help support that, and we expressed our position on the road and the rail, the port, and all of our other projects. And overall, I think it went well. I just hope that we continue to have that dialogue. But when it comes to several transportation, especially, there's a move afoot forced by the state for consolidation of public transit, which I think there's a thought that there might be some savings by consolidating. When you look at the borough and the operators we have, there might be some savings in overhead, but there's surely, we're all in different geographic markets, from the operation in Sutton to the Matt Valley Mover to the other modes and companies out there. It kind of pits them against each other in my mind, and I'll be careful looking at that, and that we don't just force bureaucracy on top of what might right now be somewhat competitive. Additionally, looking at the kind of last Nick later, the Anchorage is expressing their interest in kind of wrestling through the Uber stuff, the technology-driven ride-share program. You know, since we don't regulate that out here, I it's kind of interesting, and they've focused some of their discussion, I think, to figure out where they could use that to fill in the holes for their transportation, like in Chugach, Eagle River, and stuff that extends out to us. So it'll be interesting going forward. But unless somebody else has some of the comments, I thought the meeting went well overall. But we need to, especially when it came to the port and the rail, I think it was important to let them and others know where we're at, what our intent is, and our desire to get those completed as top-line projects. And I think that was clear. And I think finally they have looked at their port and what we're doing on our side, and maybe reviewing theirs as a port redesign rather than a huge port expansion, since we're developing quite a bit of capability on our side.
Thank you. And I did get a good report from at least one assembly member in Anchorage today at the Alaska Municipal League meetings. So, assembly member Beck?
I was anticipating the...
Was watching that light there. Public relations, assembly member Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There was an agricultural forum that five assembly members were able to attend at least part or all of a week and a half ago here at the assembly chambers. There were over 50 people from the community. A majority of them were farmers and people from other organizations and activities that are interested in agriculture. And the overwhelming outcome of that meeting was the desire to have in place some kind of agricultural advisory commission, whatever the name may be, that takes a look at our agricultural policies and lands and makes recommendations to the assembly appropriately. And so I'm in the process of working with staff to establish an ad hoc committee that will actually make recommendations for what that committee could look like and how to move forward, what the goals of that committee would be and what the makeup and the names of that committee could be. So that was a great meeting, and I really, on record, would like to thank everybody again who was willing to come and spend the entire day with them here with us. Thank you.
Very good. Mr. Manager.
Good evening. About a month ago, the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation sponsored a study forecasting the next 10-year resource development projects. And two projects really kind of stuck out as really being important for the state and a huge economic impact, positive impact it would have. And one of them, of course, is the gas line project. But the second, and just as important, is the Donlin Gold project. Tonight we have Kurt Parkin from Donlin Gold. He's external affairs manager, and he's here to kind of give us an update on the progress.
Very good. Welcome to the bureau. Yeah, hit it again so the light's on. There you go.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Members of the Assembly, it's a privilege to speak to you tonight. I'll give you a very short update on where the Donlin Gold project is. I understand you all have copies of a few slides here. I apologize to the audience that I don't have a flash drive so we could broadcast this to everybody. But if you just pay attention to the first page, the cover page on your handout, you'll notice the photo photo there is of the project site, and the buildings in the foreground is the current camp, and then the hill in the background that's got the autumn colors is where the ore deposit is. That's where the gold is. The project itself is located about 285 miles west of Anchorage. It's 10 miles from the community of Crooked Creek near the Kuskokwim River. You look at the second page. We are located on Alaska Native corporate land. We're on Chelista Corporation land. They own the subsurface rights. We have a lease with them. They selected that land for resource development potential and asked us to help them develop that for them. The Kuskokwim Corporation is a consortium of 10 villages that are of the in that area, the village corporations, that have the surface rights to the project site. So they're our principal partners in this endeavor. It's a large mine. It's a gold mine. 33.9 million ounces of reserves have been identified, and the mine life would be about 27 plus years. For the operation, we'll average about 1 million ounces of gold a year. The mine itself will be an open pit mine, similar to the Fort Knox mine in Fairbanks, but a larger project than the Fort Knox project. We'll have a fully lined tailings storage facility. It'll be a synthetic liner. It'll be the first one of its kind in Alaska. And quite a bit of infrastructure, because we are so remote, there will be no real road access to the site. So we'll have a runway, a camp for 600 employees, a 30-mile road that will go from port on the Kuskokwim River and two ports, one port in Bethel, and then the other one near Crooked Creek, about 8 miles downriver from Crooked Creek. There will be about 69 haul trucks, 400 tons each. That's as large as they make them. So they're big pieces of equipment with electric shovels. And one of our biggest challenges has been how do we provide power to this project site. We're going to need, on average, 150 megawatts of power, which, as I understand it, is similar to what Golden Valley provides for the Fairbanks area. And we looked at a variety of ways to get the energy up to the project site, including coal and power lines and nuclear even, and diesel being transported up the Kuskokwim River. We decided at one point to do diesel, but then after talking to the communities along the river, learned that wasn't a preferred option for them. And we went back to the drawing board and decided that the natural gas pipeline was actually going to be cheaper for us, more environmentally safe, and would take about 80 million gallons of diesel off the river that would have otherwise been transported up the river. So we settled on a pipeline. Getting supplies to the camp will be via barge, principally. From the west coast, we'll take ocean barges up to Bethel, transport the material to specially designed river barges, and then take that up to the upper port and follow the 30-mile road to the project site. You'll also see on that one slide the yellow line, which is for the natural gas pipeline, which I think a lot of people particularly have interest in, and I'll talk about that for just a minute. You see the photo or the slide that shows the pipeline route. This is a 315-mile pipeline. It ties into the Beluga natural gas fields and follows up through the Rainy Pass area and then west to the project site. It's going to be buried for the entire route, with the exception of a fault zone, the Denali Fault up near a Farewell, where it'll be out of the above ground for just a very short period of time. It's 14 inches steel. We will be using about 30 to 35 million cubic feet of natural gas a day, which is about 50% of the capacity. A lot of people ask us, are we going to be providing natural gas to the rest of Western Alaska? And we're a gold mining company, so we're not really a utility, and that's not going to be our purpose. But that being said, we're only using half the capacity of the pipeline. And so if a regional entity or some sort of consortium figured out a way to finance tapping into the pipeline, it would be an open access pipeline, so anybody could tap into it if they could find the resources to do so. So at least we're bringing natural gas 315 miles closer to part of the state that really has some critical energy issues. The pipeline itself will be constructed using temporary roads and crossings. And all those roads and crossings will be reclaimed at the end of the construction site. That'll include runways and roads. So it'll be restored to as close a natural condition as possible after we're done with it. We'll be using horizontal directional drilling to go under the major rivers in the challenging, geotechnically challenging areas. And there will be approximately every 20 miles a manual check valve that will be sticking up. So that's about the only thing that you would see along the way. The pipeline is actually located on the western side of the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. and crosses state land for the most part, and federal land before it gets to our project site, and crosses Siri native corporate land for just a very short period of time. We get a lot of questions about the source of natural gas, and we're hopeful that there's adequate natural gas in Cook Inlet with all the recent exploration work that's been going on. In fact, on the drive out here, I listened to a story about another potential export venture that's taking place. So we're pretty positive about the prospects of the natural gas source from Cook Inlet. So where are we in the process right now? Well, in 2015, we'll have been out there for 20 years. It's been 20 years in identifying the resources, doing the exploration work, doing the environmental baseline data work, doing the studies, talking to the communities in the region. And 2.5 years ago, we filed our first permit application with the Corps of Engineers, and that triggered the EIS process, and we're now 2.5 years into the EIS process. The Corps of Engineers is a lead agency. There are a number of cooperating agencies, including EPA, Fish and Wildlife Service, BLM, the state Department of Natural Resources. A large mine permitting team is coordinating the state effort, and there are approximately 5 tribes that are cooperating agencies as well. We've gone through the scoping phase, and right now we are in the process of having the agency review of the alternatives that have been kind of brought forward, and we expect that the draft EIS will be out for public comment sometime early next fall. So late summer, early fall 2015, comment period will take place for several weeks, I guess. That's yet to be determined. And then approximately another year before the final EIS is submitted, then Record of Decision sometime probably in early 2017. We're going to need about 100 permits. This is a big project. We could have had an environmental impact statement for just the pipeline, for just the mill, for just the road, for just the each port, but we've decided to put it all into one comprehensive application. So about 100 permits. Once we get the EIS, that really kind of drives the rest of the permitting process after that. We are currently in a comment period for our pipeline right-of-way lease application. The State Pipeline Coordinator's Office has had a couple of public hearings already, and they're planning on having a public hearing in January in Squintna. And the comment period ends on January 28th, so if anybody has got an interest in commenting on our pipeline right-of-way lease application, the address of the State Pipeline Coordinator's Office is there before you, and we welcome any comments and encourage anybody who wants to comment. And then lastly, we're principal sponsors of both the Iditarod and the Iron Dog races, and we're all crossing our fingers hoping we get some snow pretty soon. So, again, thanks for the opportunity to give you an update, and I'd be happy to answer any questions if I can.
Thanks.
Boy, not soon enough.
Thank you very much. So I take it you don't have gas contracts yet?
Not yet, no.
Very good. Thanks for your presentation, and we're glad to have you for neighbors.
Thank you
very
much.
We'll be glad to tax your pipeline, too.
I'm sure we'll be talking.
Okay. Mr. Manager.
Next, we have our Public Works Director, Terry Dolan. We've made presentations on our bond projects, but we have just as much to crow about with our RSA projects that Terry's in charge of. And so it's Terry, proceed, please.
Yes, sir. Gentlemen, about 3 weeks ago, we had a transportation fair at which Mr. Moosey saw a chart that looked like the map that you have in front of you. It looks sort of like this. And there's copies of this in the back as well, if any residents would like to see it. Essentially, what it covers is road projects that we've been constructing, the Public Works Department has been doing with essentially RSA funds and some grant monies. And the original chart we showed at the fair had it broken out by road service area, but we took it here and overlaid it on top of the districts for your viewing pleasure, so you can see what's sort of been going on in your district this summer and what we're planning on next summer. Looking at the map, those green items are ones that we've completed. The yellow ones are underway, and the red ones are in the design stage, and so we plan to execute those next summer, construct them next summer. And to just sort of give you the totals, this year we completed about $6.6 million worth of these projects, and these are typically above about $25,000 is the class of these projects. There's a lot of other smaller projects that we do, total of about 175 or so this summer, as small as things like putting up streetlights at a bus stop and that type of thing. But these are the bigger ones that are on this chart, so you can see sort of what we did this summer in your area. We think we'll complete another about $3 million worth next summer, and then the next assembly meeting we'll be bringing forward the new road capital improvement project list for your approval, and you'll see additional projects that we'll be recommending for next year and the following years. And I just wanted to point out one other document is this one that's really hard to read. I can't do it without my glasses, but it's got the colors on the side, and it shows you the current projects and the statuses of all of them. And these are available in the back also.
So does this represent, we've been talking about 27 road projects that have been going on. This is all aside from that.
That is correct. You look at this map, you overlay our school projects and bond projects. You know, we've really had a very active and prosperous summer. I'm really really knocked out by this. Staff was able to pull this off. And we're trying real hard to really earn the respect of our constituents that that when they give us work to do, we can do it right, do it well, do it on time, and give them good value. And I think we're making big strides for that. And that will be one of the messages I take down to Juneau. It's like when you give us money to do a project, you can count on us to get it done and get it accomplished in a timely manner. So, Assembly, I think you really got a good crew here in both Public Works and Capital Projects and the support team. In purchasing and finance and even legal down there that helps pull just a little bit of legal that helps pull this stuff off.
Assemblymember Culligan.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you and staff, both Public Works and Project Management and the administration. It isn't a whole lot of fun during budget process when we have discussions and deliberations, have to make tough decisions, but you know, this is the time to just see what an excellent job you guys did this summer. Before, when we were in budget process, it was, you know, the anticipation that if you lived out Vine or whatever, you weren't going to be able to go in any direction without hitting construction. And those projects went so well. And the roundabouts and other road projects that were put in just went really well this summer. I think there was a little bit of pain from the public, but overall they saw move ahead, and you guys just did a great job, and now is the time to publicly thank you very much for your efforts, and hopefully next budget year we'll be rolling along as well. Thank you.
The last thing I have, and it's been a good couple of weeks for the borough. I want to kind of announce five different awards that our staff has received. Yesterday, the Alaska Planning Association named R. Lauren Kruer Planner of the Year. Also, too, at the award ceremony, the community of Big Lake got award for efficient and small-town planning project and tied in with their potential development and road access through there. And this is the first year for that award. A week ago, your colleague, Jim Culver, and I know this is a misnomer for him, but the Mat-Su Conventions and Visitors Bureau named him the Tourism Angel, and it was the first time anybody called Jim an angel, but he does have a plaque that signifies that. Yes, you can. This would be appropriate time, especially since he's not here. To outdo Jim, the borough got the Northern Lights Award for tourism development, primarily with our trails projects, but also to the Hatcher Pass. And then just yesterday, we got a national award for the National Fish Habitat Partnership. There was two given nationally this year. We received one of them, and it was for restoration, for prevention, and then also two information gaps. So once again, the work we did at LIDAR in that program is paying dividends to really help us do this. The money we've put into the fish passage and putting in culverts really is making a day and making a huge difference. And I think it was about 6 months ago, the Assembly passed a resolution that on new construction projects that we have to take in consideration not to block off fish passage and fish habitat. And according, this is secondhand information, but according to the person who represented us, we're the only one in the nation who has take that forward step. So, you know, kudos to us. We're working hard trying to make things work, and we're getting us a little bit of recognition. So that's all I have this evening.
Thank you.
Oh.
Yes?
I'm sorry. That is not all what I have this evening. One of the things that the Assembly charged me with was to start selling some property. And so our Community Development Department put up 31 parcels for sale beginning of the month. Eight parcels received bids so we can put those back into taxable income. And essentially, we're probably seeing about a 20% increase of purchase above our assessed value. So not a huge demand, but it's our first start, and we'll continue to make those efforts to really put some of the borough property that's not needed into private hands for homesteads, for ag, and then commercial and resource development.
So are those remaining parcels available over the counter?
Yes, they are, beginning at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Okay. Just so everybody knows. Just in case they're looking for Alaska dirt, I'll never forget running into a neighbor up on Lazy Mountain that had bought a one-acre parcel at a flea market in Houston, and she still had driftwood on her car after driving over the Alaskan Highway. It hadn't washed the car yet, but she was jumping up and down saying, "I've got Alaskan dirt."
I'm assuming that's the Texas Houston, not the Alaska Houston?
This is the Alaska Houston is where she got, yeah, oh, okay. It was here that she bought it. But she was ecstatic. Mr. Attorney.
I think what the manager meant when he said we assist is that's when they listen to us, which is why it's only a little bit. So I'll start from the top. Uber, Mr. Mayor, you mentioned it was... You mentioned Uber earlier, and I was at the municipal attorney's section of the AML conference the past 2 days, and that was a topic of discussion and presentation from the municipal attorney's office. And in talking with other attorneys down there, the Uber, the company, has hired people to go out and do PR work / lobbying work on their behalf. And I was asked directly by one of their attorneys, have they contacted me yet? And I said, no, why? I said, well, we gave them your name, so they will be. So they're coming. So whatever the issues are that we want to discuss, we can certainly do that at some point. As it stands right now, we have no regulations regarding carriers or transportation in the borough. We would have to look at, as a second-class borough, how much we could. But it's anticipated that, in speaking with their council, that once they get things straightened out in Anchorage, they're just going to continue to expand.
Mr. Colligan?
So I guess in that regard, through the mayor to council, what do we need to do to refine it? Do we have any of those transportation powers? What's your thought? I mean, we don't have a regulated taxi cab industry, but do we have any transportation authority as a body in that regard under our current class of borough?
It would depend on what type of regulations we were looking at doing. If it was a levying an excise tax, that might be something you could do for the privilege of engaging in the activity within the confines of the Mat-Su borough. In terms of regulations, we have the power to provide for transportation systems. And so I have a fairly extensive legislative history memorandum upstairs from a few years ago that I'd have to re-review to find out what the extent of those powers are. So it's certainly a discussion we could start to have, but since you mentioned it, I figured I'd mention it. It will be coming. I know that.
Yeah, I guess personally, there's the taxing and revenue from it, which I'm not really jumping up and down excited, versus the safety and just operation of a different type of approach to an industry that we need in our community and just how we approach it. Do we need to direct you to kind of follow that, or you're already on that?
I mean, I can certainly follow up and get back to you. I mean, I was asked directly, what regulations do you have right now? And the answer is none, okay. And we've never had any. So, I mean, we have, you see cabs driving around now, maybe Wasilla and Palmer do, but we certainly don't.
Okay.
So, of interest to the body, and another topic of discussion at AML, of course, was legislative budgetary projections with oil in the mid-70s right now. Last year's budget was projected to balance at something like $117 a barrel, and the average price is about $103 so far. I mention that because the legal tie-in is oral argument was June 3rd on the Ketchikan Borough lawsuit against the state of Alaska regarding they sued the state alleging that the mandatory contribution for education is unconstitutional. And they think they're going to win. So I mention that because if they win, next legislative session, the mandatory local contribution law will be gone, because even if they file an appeal to the Supreme Court, it's going to be another year or more before we get a ruling out of the Supreme Court. So I will be watching that very closely and will let you know, because that could have a very large impact on funding from Juneau, because if the mandatory local contribution goes away, they have to decide how much they're going to fund schools, which could impact, of course, everything else. I know that Fairbanks joined in as an amicus brief on that lawsuit as well, so there's a couple municipalities there. We also had a very large discussion about the legalization of marijuana, which is something we should probably start talking about pretty soon. I've since it passed, I read the initiative. Most people I was talking to down there, I was trying to find out what other municipalities were doing, and they're going to be looking at us as the what people said. Mat-Su, you've got the history there, I guess, or something like that. I'll be reviewing bills, kind of watching what's going on in Juneau. I've already talked to the manager about potentially getting involved a little bit on the lobbying efforts in Juneau. There are certain things we're going to want to see happen, certain things we're going to want to not see happen in terms of regulations that might be imposed by the state legislature, filling in all the gaps and all the holes. By way of comparison, of course, now that it's passed, it's all relevant. And the Washington law that legalized marijuana a couple years ago was 60 pages long, and it covered everything. For example, it had the active metabolite in your blood at which point you're presumed under the influence for driving under the influence of marijuana. Ours was 6 pages long, so there's a lot that remains to be filled in. And they're going to have to watch very closely as to how those regulations get implemented in Juneau, starting with the legislature, and then either to the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, or if they're going to create another board to try to deal with it. So I'll be updating you from time to time on that as to what's going on. And then,
Mr. Culligan.
Yeah. So thanks, Nick. On that one, I wouldn't mind if you wouldn't brief us here soon after AML's over, on the difference. So Anchorage and all the drama in the news the last couple of days about exempting up. My biggest problem is agreeing to something when it's not defined. What is the time frame? And dispensing of all the drama, if you could sometime here in the near future give us a brief on.
Sure. You want me to walk you through what it is and what's unanswered?
Correct. And,
sure.
and just what our rights are as our class of borough.
Sure.
And at what point is that law in effect, and are we I don't want to sit here and agree to some laws that's not written yet or whatever. It's quite troubling, not the for or against the initiative. I want to know personally what we are allowing and not allowing and what under what authority.
Okay.
Before it's just the wild, wild west.
I can put together a short presentation for the next regular meeting and do it during this report.
Perfect.
Maybe 10 minutes or so, kind of walk through it. And then finally, next Monday morning, I know we have our legislative meeting in the afternoon. I have oral argument on Ray DeVilbiss versus Matt Subaru in the Supreme Court of the State of Alaska downtown regarding the constitutionality of road service area taxes. As you recall, Mr. DeVilbiss sued us because he lives on a road that is currently maintained by the State of Alaska and is saying it's unconstitutional for us to levy road service area taxes against the farm property that he has. So that oral argument is next Monday, and I'll let you know how it goes. That's what I have.
Thank you, Madam Clerk.
Clerk's report is in your red folders, the meeting schedule for the rest of the year. And also attached to that is the agenda for the November 24th joint meeting with the state delegation. And that is all I have.
Assemblymember Mayfield.
Yes, I'd like to move to hold an assembly planning session on January 17th, 2015, from 9 to 5 p.m., facilitated by a professional facilitator for the purpose of the borough assembly to provide direction to the manager on borough priorities. At that meeting, I'd like the public to be able to weigh in at the beginning of the meeting.
Okay, I'll take that as a motion. Do you want to...
Did you say January 17th?
January 17th, yes.
Is there objection to that? Assemblymember Beck?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I don't object to it. I object to the date. I would not be available that day is all.
That's probably pretty important because this is a strategic planning session.
Yes. January 24th, I think, might... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Down the calendar.
I need to look at the calendar.
Yeah, what are your cruise dates?
Yeah, 10th through the... So you're saying the 23rd? Or what?
24th?
I think that works.
Nine a.m.
Yeah, it's an all day thing pretty much.
I'm sorry?
I repeat the hours on it again.
Yes, I had indicated I'm proposing 9 to 5.
Right.
Yeah.
Could end earlier, but starting at 9.
Right.
Not to exceed 5.
January 24th.
And Mr. Halter.
And the mission of this what was the mission?
Well, basically, it's to provide direction to the manager.
Priorities.
This would be different than our legislative priorities? And
yes.
This would be in
These are our administrative priorities.
Okay. Thanks.
So we've got consensus. Thank you.
I'll look for a location. Usually we do it off-site. I will look for a location to have that. Assemblymember Culligan said we are welcome to Wasilla. I think the last one we did hold in Big Lake, and I do try to move it around.
I do have...
Mr. Mayfield.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I do have one further motion. I'd like to move that we hold a special meeting on December 4th at 3 p.m. for the purpose of the assembly to consider the method of appointing a replacement assembly member for Mr. Culver, who has indicated his desire to resign in January.
December 4th. So you're presuming there will be a vacancy by then?
He has indicated to me that he is going to resign sometime in January. I just think we ought to take an opportunity to decide on the method of the appointment, the mechanism that we're going to use in order to decide that appointment.
Well, I'd like the attorney to address that because I think that's pretty cut and dry.
I'm not sure it would take a special meeting, is what I'm saying.
Well, Mr. Mayor, members of the Assembly, the process of appointment is, state law says that the remaining members of the Assembly appoint to fill the vacancy. Of course, implied in that is it's going to have to be a resident from District 6. But some of the things you could potentially talk about is, how do you plan to solicit applications? Do you want to have a printed application? Do you want to just have people submit names? Are you going to advertise? Is there going to be a time frame for that? Is everyone just going to go talk to people? I mean, there are certainly administrative aspects of it. Are you going to want the clerk to put an ad out well in advance? Because state statute says 30-day deadline. Now, the 30-day deadline may be a little movable, but I think the intent behind the law is that you don't want people unrepresented for an extended period of time. So I think as long as we're diligent in moving towards getting the appointment, if it takes 32 days or something, that might be okay. But certainly we're going to want to hop on it right away. And so, you know, some of these questions ahead of time, especially if you're going to solicit applications, you may want to have the clerk make an announcement, you know, in the newspaper early or something like that. I don't know. We would also need to talk with Assemblymember Culver to know if he knows what date he might plan on doing that. So there is room to talk administratively about things. I can certainly, again, we can start the meeting. I can run through the state statutes for you and then kind of show you what the open issues are.
So first, just to clarify the motion, did you mean December 4th? Because we have a regular meeting on December 2nd.
We do. We could incorporate that, I suppose, in the December 2nd meeting.
Or have an early session.
We could. Yeah. Uh-huh. That would be perfectly fine.
Assemblymember Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was going to request Assemblymember Mayfield, what's the official request, Lonnie, to adjust his motion to reflect that? It's standard for us as an assembly. We often have meetings like this at 4 p.m. before the regular meeting on December 2nd, and then we take a break in between. So that's, I was just going to, what's that call, were you? Yeah. Thank you.
All right. I compose that.
Okay.
So it's December, what's on the floor now is December 2nd at 4 p.m. Is that what I'm hearing?
Right.
Okay.
Let's settle that before we go on. I think you've got more to say. Is there objection to a work session at 4 o'clock prior to our December 2nd regular meeting?
What if Mr. Colbert hasn't resigned?
It doesn't matter. We're just going to assume
he will. We're going to replace
him no
matter what.
Yeah.
No, the purpose of the meeting is to talk about how we're going to facilitate that appointment. So advertising, for instance, the clerk would advertise it, and we may have some questions that we will want to ask as a body or as individuals to that potential appointee.
Assemblymember Culligan.
There's an amendment or not, but before we have Picasso by committee, I would ask that at that meeting if the clerk and the attorney or whoever the appropriate people in the administration are, they could outline a process as a straw man, wasting hours and hours trying to jumble through that. I think our staff probably has the collective capability to outline a starting point at least. And if we could do that before the meeting and have that presented, and if there's any changes. Otherwise, I don't think it's a special meeting necessarily, but if we could do that in an hour, be briefed on what the rules are and the law is, and the clerk is normally the one to advertise that. If you could come up with a basically a proposal and a timeline, what if, and go from there.
So I've heard no objection to the date, 2nd of December. No. Okay. Assemblymember Sykes on the main motion as amended.
Well, yes, I just would like to follow up on Assemblymember Culligan's comments. Other people have done this kind of process before filling vacancies, and if we can have some information on how other people have already done it, like the school board or other municipalities, so that we can see a variety of options that we might... What we've been outlined by the law, as I understand it, is that we are responsible for doing the replacement, but how we choose to do that, has some leeway. And so if we have that in advance, as Mr. Culligan suggested, some other examples, then we can come to agreement perhaps a lot quicker. And I do support the main motion.
Mr. Attorney?
And if you're contemplating coming to some sort of agreement on how to proceed, I would strongly suggest you make this a special meeting instead of a work session so you can take some action. Okay.
Yeah, I think that was the motion. So, is there objection to the motion as amended? Hearing none, it passes. And that takes us away from the clerk's report. Okay. We have citizen and other correspondents. Any comments or questions? Present IM, Madam Clerk.
IM number 14144, reporting of conclusion of contract for bid number 14116B and 14117B to Alaskan Industries Incorporated for multi-purpose room flooring replacement at 5 schools and multi-purpose room flooring replacement at 4 schools, project numbers 40178, 40186, for the final contract amounts of $364,800 and $396,400.
Okay. That brings us to unfinished business, Ordinance 14-119. Madam Clerk, this is already on the table.
The unfinished business is, Mr. Mayor, if I could read it into the record.
Go ahead.
Ordinance 0 number 14-119, an ordinance approving a supplemental appropriation of $450,000 from the Wasilla Lakes Fire Service Area Fund Balance, Fund 250, to Fund Fiscal Year 2015, Wasilla Lakes Fire Service Area Operating Budget, Fund 250, for wages and benefits for 4 new permanent fire service captain positions.
Thank you. Mr. Manager, you had a request on this.
Yes, sir. Thank you. On page 188 of this ordinance, the last whereas we would like to remove or strike. It reads, whereas the FFI / captain positions will be employees who supervise other supervisor positions. These positions will be exempt from the MSBEA bargaining unit as per borough code 2.52.653. We would like that whereas removed. Other than that, we're recommending approval.
Could you say why?
Yes, we have some difference of opinions on which positions are in bargaining and non-bargaining. We together jointly decided we are going to be working together on those positions and going through the process. So instead of doing this piecemeal here, this allows this project to go forward and get these people employed, working for us, because we do have a staffing need. We'll be able to address these and deal with these issues. We feel a multiple number of issues, positions that there's a disagreement on, and so we're going through that process to determine which should be in and which should be out.
Assemblymember Culligan, do you want to make that motion?
Yeah, first I'd like to clarify the process for determining which positions are in or out. How do you foresee that working out, I guess?
The way I perceive it is we'll be having some discussions to see if we can come to agreement. And on those we do not have agreement, we will probably be seeking, in fact, we probably won't, I will request, and I think they'll agreeable to, to seek an arbitrator to make that determination for us. This has been, you know, as you know, an issue that has been discussed in the past, and I would like to just get resolution for this, and I think the union would also.
Do we have anticipation of the time? And I mean, bottom line is I'm supportive and we need to address some of the stuff, but also I don't really worry about not defining some of that up front from a management perspective. I would like to see positions filled, and they've been asking for a while, but I think that some of those are truly supervisor management. And how many of those positions do we feel are management or supervisory? And
Mr. Manager?
Yes, and timing is the issue. That's why we want to withdraw this so we can move forward on this ordinance so we can hire for those positions. I'm guessing this is process from start to finish may take up to a year.
and in my determination, and please cover your ears, gentlemen, and back, is probably about 30 positions, or 30 folks in positions that there might be some disagreement on.
Assembly Member Culligan.
So with that, I'm a little bit reluctant. I would like to see us move forward with this, and I'm going to support this, but I'm a little concerned about not defining those up front, but we need to have some action. So, and I'm looking down the road here at the attorney. Nick, do you have any input? What timeline and process?
I haven't been part of the discussions with between the manager and the union on these issues, so no.
It seems to me, Mr. Manager, if your intent is eventually for these to be non-union positions, this is a step backwards.
Well, there, like I said, there is a multitude, and if you know, based on my discussions with the union and trying to establish good relations, if you feel it's necessary to put that clause in, then I want to withdraw this ordinance tonight because I don't want to renege on conversations that we had. I mean, it's important that we build trust with our folks. There has been a negotiation discussion on these issues, and we want to. And when we have disagreements through this, there is a process to maybe bring a third party in to help us decide what those issues are.
Mr. Mayor?
Cool. Yes. Assemblymember Culligan.
You know, I am support and ask for bail support of this, but I would ask that our borough attorney also be involved in some of those communications as we move forward and we get briefed as part of this process. And with that, I'd like to move forward with those with the changes to the ordinance and go with that. But this is a subject I think we need to be involved and briefed with from our legal department.
So the motion is to amend by striking the last whereas. Further discussion?
That is correct.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the amendment passes. We have before us the main motion. Is there further discussion? You don't want to pull it out, Mr. Manager? No, you're happy.
I don't understand your question, sir.
No, I was joking.
Oh, okay.
I don't hear any objection, so it passes as amended. It's very timely. Assemblymember Beck, is it time for a break?
Yes, please.
Okay. Let's come back at 7:10. Hearings, Madam Clerk, Ordinance 14129.
An ordinance approving the Coalaska Incorporated application to purchase the development rights on 2.1305 acres of agricultural rights only property purchased by Coalaska Inc. for gravel and fill extraction, MSB 001878.
Thank you. This is a public hearing, and we announced earlier in the meeting this. The intention is to postpone this at the request of the applicant, but we are going to take testimony on this. We have Elsa Billingham, followed by Helen Minos, signed up. You signed the wrong one?
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was a new subject for you.
No.
Okay. So, Elsa, are you here? Did you make a mistake, too? No. Very good.
Hi, my name is Elsa Billingham. I'm here to oppose granting Coalaska the 213 acres for development into a gravel pit. The reason being is because they have already been granted approximately 1,000 acres of land to develop into a gravel pit. This 213 acres, I believe, should be preserved for agricultural uses. Just because I think 1,000 acres of gravel pit is extreme. I'm a property owner. I own two 10-acre lots, and I'm surrounded by this 1,000-acre gravel pit. I've owned my land for over 40 years. I've paid taxes for over 40 years. Now, I can't even get to my land because when I drive on the dirt road, I'm stopped by somebody either with CoAlaska or the explosive company that's also out there. And so I really don't have any access to my land after 40 years of paying taxes. I have a view of a gravel pit. And I would like to say that, have any of you been out there to see this gravel pit? I would like to invite anybody on the assembly to go with me and go out there and see what they're doing. They have a hole in the ground that's as big as this room and probably deeper than this building. It's just extreme, in my opinion. I would like to see quality asphalt or CoAlaska. Start recycling and maybe using some recycled products like recycled glass, recycled tires. I mean, we're generating billions of tons of garbage. People are. And why can't we use it? I know that recycled glass, and I've bought recycled glass before. Some of it is just beautiful. They make nice tiles, just nice products. Also, I support agricultural lands. My mother's a farm girl from Minnesota. She grew up on a farm. My dad's a retired Air Force pilot, and he was stationed at Elmendorf Air Force Base. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you. We got the drift of that. Is there anybody else? There's nobody else signed up that wants to speak to this issue. Please come forward. State your name for the record.
Thank you for the opportunity, Larry. And my name is Bud Smith. It states that in this case that it's for development. I'm not sure what development means, but I can't ever see it in any gravel pit. I see degradation, and it's but if tearing something up and ruining a natural resource that's the most important one we have, actually, because you have a hard time living without food. If that doing that is development, then I don't really want any of it. But whatever we do with it, we should make sure that it's researched a little bit better than it is before they hand out the ag parcels, because that wasn't done that well, and return to at least as good a condition as the soil's condition as it was when they started. And that'll be difficult to do, so maybe they should have something else to back that up, to add to that, like trade-off. That's pretty much all I got to say about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Seeing and hearing none, we'll close the public hearing and bring it back to Assemblymember Halter. Yeah, turn on your mic so we're on the record.
I move to adopt Ordinance Serial Number 14-129, and I want to move an amendment, Mr. Mayor.
The manager.
I'm going to continue this, but I want to move the amendment and then have a vote on the amendment and then continue.
Madam Clerk? I guess, you can.
The amendment is also in everybody's red folder and in the back of the room, so you have it.
In the back of the room, too, so. I move to amend Ordinance Serial Number 14-129, page 241 and 242 of the packet as follows. First bullet, insert at the end of the title, and appropriate the proceeds into an account to purchase agriculture land. And second bullet, inserting a number 5 to read 5. All proceeds in the amount of $7,561 per acre in the total amount of $1,610,871.05 for the 213.05 acre parcel be used solely by the borough to purchase like or better land designated agriculture land to promote agriculture. That's my amendment.
Okay, on the amendment, Assemblymember Beck.
I appreciate the spirit of Assemblymember Halter's amendment, and I'm just curious if the management could tell me. I'm wondering, what if that number changes if we do end up postponing this and that the second half of this amendment changes? Is there a potential for that, Mr. Manager, that, I mean, like, it might be potentially worth more if we postpone this long enough?
Mr. Manager?
If you're talking short term up until February, I don't know if that price will increase. What we can do is an appraisal at the time and base it on the current appraisal price. And I can probably have Eric or Glenn to come up and speak to that. I mean, we're getting into the details on this. No. They're the ones who handle. No? Okay, sit back down, Eric, please.
Madam Clerk.
If the number changes, you can amend it again in February.
We can do a secondary amendment.
Yes, yes.
Assemblymember Culligan.
Yeah, I'd vote to postpone this to a date certain. I appreciate the discussion, but also reviewing some of the information. It's interesting how the borough is evaluating the price of their property versus the other end, and I'd like some time to review some of the how we're doing our valuations and the like. It seems we're often wanting to get maximum from both ends versus the property owner negotiation for some of their. I just ask that we postpone this discussion, and I'd like to hear. I have problems with I understand the preserving agricultural stuff, properties and the like, and I'd like to see some process to do that. But I also look around at just like the rest of our insufficient mapping and other information we have in the borough, that just because the land has been cleared and has windrows, it's never grown agricultural. Are there other suitable areas for farmlands that we aren't looking at? And then fighting over this one that supplies gravel for all of our road construction projects to the north. It's deserving of a discussion, but before we set price and property, I also find it's interesting that I actually took a look at this, and there's a 20-acre difference between the listing of the size of that parcel, that total parcel, and what the borough has under sort of legal description that we're taxing versus our GIS information and the like. And I just like to ferret all that out.
Okay, motion to postpone. Let's get the date clear. Is it February 3rd or February 17th?
Either one of those will do. I was curious, if I could asked Mr. Sykes, and I didn't have the opportunity to attend the entire agricultural discussion, if, maybe before we decide that, what is the time frame from that meeting, and what are we expecting by waiting? Otherwise, February would be fine.
What's your point, Assemblyman? Well, there's a higher...
I knew we were going to do a motion to continue. But I'd like this motion. The numbers.
There's a motion to postpone, so we've got to deal with that.
I'm opposed to that until this motion is voted on.
Okay. A date.
February
in order for the motion to be valid and to be not just something that kills it, it needs to be a date certain.
So whatever latest date in February would be
February 17th.
February 17th. Okay, on the motion to postpone, is there discussion? Assemblymember Sykes.
I'd like to make a secondary amendment because the
to the motion to postpone?
Yes.
Okay.
And it would be the date. We sort of envisioned a process to get an agricultural group going to make some recommendations just for this type of thing, and we doubted that they'd be able to make a recommendation before the 1st of April, so I would say, what is it, April 3rd that we have a meeting? That would be my... I don't have the calendar in front of me. I did a minute ago, but it's gone. First meeting in April of 2015 would be the date I would suggest by my secondary amendment.
So April 15th? I thought I heard you say April.
I thought I said April 3rd, but
3rd,
I can't remember if that's the date.
April 7th or April 21st?
April 7th, yes.
So there's a secondary amendment. I guess it's a primary amendment to the motion to postpone, right? And that is to postpone time certain April 7th. Is there objection? Hearing Mr. Mayfield?
Well, I guess I'd just like to have some discussion about this because it didn't seem like we would really have our advisory committee in place and actively making recommendations at that time. So to postpone it until April when we don't have, when we can't answer the questions that Assemblyman Colligan basically put on the table, I guess I just don't see the reason to postpone if we won't be able to get the answers then, just like we don't have them now.
Yeah, I'd like to ask the manager, what was your intent with the request to postpone?
It was made by the applicant because they...
No, but as far as the date?
It was the first meeting in February was the request.
Okay. So, we'll note for the record, Assemblymember Representative Culver arrived at 7:24. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, Assemblymember Beck, I think, on the motion to postpone.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think that time frame to April would actually be more reasonable than February to postpone because of the ad hoc committee putting it in place and looking at what the goals of that committee are just initially. This is the kind of issue that they'd take a look at and they'd make recommendations about, but we need the time to put that committee in place and get them rolling ahead, and they have several tasks before them, but this could be the very kind of issue that they would deal with. I think we could tackle it by April. I think that would be a reasonable time frame.
Okay. Assemblymember Culver.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Talking about postponing the development rights of that proposed gravel pit expansion.
Right.
April seems too long, Matt, for them to, you know, be able to figure that into their work plans if they're going to buy this. What's the purpose of the postponement by the petitioner, Mr. Manager, through the chair?
Assemblymember Sykes made the last amendment.
They don't think the appraisal's too high?
No, the intent was to postpone until the Ag Committee could make the recommendation.
Okay. Well, we've had testimony then. I've been calling farmers about this over the, and I was at the State Farm Bureau meeting too last weekend. If other farmland was acquired that was of higher or better value and it was actually could be put in production, because this isn't in production, there's support for this concept of the amendment before the postponement. And but I think the question is, what's the vehicle to distribute it? And so I think April's too long, Matt. I mean, I think we could get consensus before that from the ag community, but I think it's the petitioner that's needs to tell us whether they want to go forward with it or not and set the price. I thought that was why they asked for this continuance in the first place, from the last time we heard this.
Mr. Manager?
The applicant wanted to move this to the first meeting in February. They did not speak to me about price or negotiation, but they did speak to me about able to deal with the assembly on this issue tonight. And that's they felt with their workload, it would be, they explained to me, it'd be better if we could deal with this the first meeting in February. And so that's why I brought this this forward based on the request. So I don't have any details on their satisfaction or dissatisfaction with this ordinance before you.
So on the motion to amend, April 7th, further discussion? Is there objection? There's objection, so put it on the board. And this is on the amendment to postpone it, the amendment to the amendment to postpone.
Mr. Mayor, it passed with Assemblymember Culver and Halter opposed.
Okay, so now we have the main motion as amended. Is there further discussion? To postpone, time certain, August 7th. April,
Just a clarification. My amendment was...
Your amendment is part of the motion at this point.
It would... Postponed.
Right, it will be postponed. Is there objection? Hearing none, we'll come back to this April 7th. So, or...
One more thing.
Mr. Halter.
I'd like to request Mr. Moosey and staff, Ms. Clayton, calculate the difference in taxes from ag land to fee simple and provide that number to assembly.
Okay. Ordinance 14-102. Right. Madam Clerk.
It's a resolution approving an application to relocate the Big Lake Lodge beverage dispensary license in the unincorporated area of the borough to Palmer City Ale House within the incorporated limits of the city of Palmer.
Okay, this is a public hearing, and there's nobody signed up. Does anybody wish to speak to this? This is moving a liquor license. Seeing and hearing none, we'll bring it back to, we'll close the public hearing and bring it back. So, take it the winner gets to make the motion instead of the loser here. Mr. Beck.
I move to adopt resolution serial number 14-102.
Very good. Discussion? Big Lake, yes, you should speak.
Actually, I wanted to make it clear that I do know Mr. and Mrs. Snyder. I don't feel I have any. In fact, I know I don't have any financial conflict in this matter, and I don't think that there's substantial conflict whatsoever. So, just wanted to state that for the record.
Okay, you think Big Lake's going to survive without that?
Big Lake has survived.
Okay,
and will continue to.
Is there further discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none, that passes. Brings us to ordinance 14-139, ordinance 14-140, ordinance 14-142, and 14-143. Madam Clerk.
Ordinance 14-139, an ordinance confirming the assessment role for the Dusk Lake Estates Natural Gas Local Improvement District Number 532 and establishing the method of terminating assessments and making refunds to property owners with accompanying ordinance and principal amount of special assessment bonds for the Dusk Lake Estates Natural Gas Local Improvement District Number 532 and fixing details of bonds. Ordinance serial number 14-142, an ordinance confirming the assessment role for the West Carpenter Lake Road Natural Gas Local Improvement District number 542 and establishing the method of terminating assessments and making refunds to property owners with accompanying ordinance 14143. An ordinance providing for the issuance of and sale of not to exceed $132,000 principal amount of special assessment bonds for the West Carpenter Lake Road Natural Gas Local Improvement District number 542 and fixing details of said bonds.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. Is there anybody that wants to speak to either of these limited improvement districts? Seeing and hearing none, we'll close the public hearing, bring it back to Mr. Assemblymember Mayfield.
Yes, I move to adopt ordinance serial number 14-139 and ordinance serial number 14-140. I also move to adopt serial number 14-142 and ordinance serial number 14-143.
Thank you. Assemblymember Sykes.
Yes, I just have a question for the manager or staff. We keep seeing more LIDs coming through that not all of them are unanimous. Some of them are just 51% votes. Are people being apprised of the option to have a non-contiguous district rather than continuing to have these sometimes contentious votes on the LIDs? Because, you know, I don't... Mr. Halter had moved to get rid of these entirely, and I think had some good reasons for it. And I'd just like to know what efforts are being made when people are proposing these to apprise them that we have the option of a non-contiguous district.
We have staff that work with the applicants and explain the options in a situation. Our current rule is that it is just 51% of the area has to have approval to get a positive result of the assembly. The assembly does not, and I'm going to have Tammy come up and kind of clarify, does not have to accept these even if it's over 50%. But you traditionally, if it's under that, you've normally done that. I know when we were successful with 100%, that is an option that was praised, and I know our staff is working for those. So I believe we have Tammy, and then we have Marsha, who may come forward and kind of explain the process they go through. But our staff has been very helpful to try to work with these, and it has this process to get natural gas has really been a benefit, and really, as you can see from the number of applicants, has been well received.
And could I suggest that these could have been approved before we had the non-contiguous LIDs, because this is we're not approving new LIDs here. These are already in the ground.
Yeah, and that's just what I was going to confirm. This, the work is complete on, so we have the final costs. So they could have got started 2 years ago.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there objection to closing debate? There's no objection. Is there objection to the ordinances as moved? Hearing none, they are passed. And that brings us to number 5, Ordinance 14-144. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance repealing MSP 8.32 electrical generation facility or power plant and adopting MSP 1706 electrical generating, and delivery facility.
Thank you. This is a public hearing, and first up is our chairman of the board that has been working on this for quite a while, Mr. Tilton, and then Ellen H. Someday I'm going to learn your name. Eugene, okay.
Hi, my name is Berkeley Tilton, and I was selected to chair the, I guess you'd call it an ad hoc committee, because we were just studying one factor here. And your reviews in your packet would probably indicate when we started, which was actually in February of 13, but we didn't get the commission filled until about August, I think, was when of 13 when we held our first meeting. In that time, we'd been charged with two things. One was to review the 8.32, but also to develop an energy policy. And we felt that perhaps the horse in front of the cart would be developing the energy policy first, which we have done, which was presented through the Planning Commission to you and approved. This is the second part of this. And there was talk here of whether it should, 8.32 should be repealed or not. And we did not go into this study with the idea of repealing 8.32. In fact, we spent, as you review our notes, or minutes rather, you'll see we spent quite a bit of time on it to the point where we started to feel where there was some duplication in the Ordinance 8.32, and we started to whittle it away, figuring we'd still end up with 8.32. Well, we took 96 pages down to 13. And at that point, we had decided, and the elements of the 13 pages all came from 8.32, except for a couple of changes I'll point to. But the idea also came across that this was really a land use issue. And it's a regional land use issue because of the impact beyond just an immediate neighbor. So we tried to take into account notification processes that would have as large an impact as we could, as far afield as possible, more so than, say, you know, a neighboring subdivision, that sort of thing. There's two elements here. Before 8.32, it was what's considered area-wide, which included the cities. And we felt that the cities with land powers should be able to determine on their own what they would like. So cities themselves, which have the designated land powers, were in effect taken out of it. And then, so this means the city, let's say some cities newly incorporated at Point McKenzie and they don't have land powers, this ordinance would still have an impact there. The second portion was the size of the power plant. We researched energy regulations throughout the United States. And the most, I use the word onerous, restrictions didn't start until 150 megawatts. We split the difference between 50 and 150 at 100, and it was 101 thanks to Nick's input on how to craft that wording. Thank you, and I'd certainly entertain any questions you guys might have.
Thank you. I think we were able to read your homework. So, Eugene, followed by Jim Walker.
My name is Eugene Haberman. I represent myself. In this particular, the 8.32 group should note that most of the time there is hardly anyone from the public there, basically government people. And as far as the public, I've been a regular attendee on most substantial number of those meetings. 8.32, what is it? To the public, they wouldn't know. They know what a Transportation Advisory Board meeting is. Deals with transportation, aviation, they deal with aviation. So the public, in your notifications, they wouldn't know and wouldn't have a clue to what's going on that. Now, prior to the conclusion of those meetings, I couldn't help but note that some of the borough assembly members didn't even know what 8.32 group is, your own body here. And if your body didn't know what 8.32, how do you expect the public to know what 8.32 is? So the result of the naming create a situation that it limited the public involvement, being acknowledged to be able, if they were going to attend, which is jeopardizing whatever decisions were made. I like to compliment the body, though. I felt welcomed there as a member of the public, though I didn't appreciate the attorney coming in toward the end, and there was a slight, I would call, intimidation, which didn't make my presence felt good there, not by the body, but by the occurrence of the attorney. So I would hope that he refrains from his intimidation tactics. And I think that I've concluded except for one thing. There is a section there concerning notification area. I would widen that. You heard the words, this is a regional issue, not something that deals with a few feet away. You know, this is a regional issue, so you should widen the notification area beyond, I believe it's 1 mile there, go 2 miles at least, if not more, to let the public know what you're doing. And get rid of the name 8.32. Let the public know what it's all about. And I hate to say is, there's a question is whatever you do now, you make a decision. The fact is the public was blind to what this group was all about. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Assemblyman. My name is Jim Walker. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent 19 years with the electric utility industry in Alaska. I'm currently employed by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. I'm not here representing the commission in any way, but I am a resident of Mat-Su Borough. The need and purpose of either 8.32 or 1706, I'm not here to address. What I'm here to address is that megawatt limit, the splitting of the baby between the 150 megawatt limit and the 50 megawatt limit. 101 makes no sense to me. The most efficient units in Alaska today are the LM6000s with steamer units on them. I'm currently serving as part of the state task force drafting responses to the EPA's carbon rule. And as part of that, we're looking at the fuel usage and emissions of the generation plants in the state. And the only ones that meet the EPA's rules are those LM6000s with the steamer units. Those come in configurations of 60 megawatts. You have one at North Pole, the Golden Valley owns, the 60 megawatts, one combustion turbine and a steamer unit. You have the one that MLMP is currently building at their next door to their existing plant two. That's two combustion turbines and a steamer unit at 120 megawatts. And you have the one next to Chugach's headquarters, three LM6000s with a steamer unit at 183 megawatts. Those are the only units in this state that actually meet the EPA's limits. And to my way of thinking that if you're going to set a limit on this ordinance, the appropriate one would be to set it at 120 so that the unit you get may be one that isn't going to be paying carbon penalties under the regulations EPA is proposing. That's my recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Assemblymember Culligan.
So thank you very much for your testimony. So in us setting a regulation that over time, versus how much is the technology in the industry, 60 megawatt increments now, what do you, is that likely to change? I mean, when we're setting
Golden Valley put their North Pole unit in, I believe, in 2006. MLMP is building theirs now. The South Central units were constructed 2012, 2013. Certainly technology is going to change. These are the LM6000s are the aero derivatives, are basically jet engines. They're very lightweight aluminum, and that's what gives them that added fuel efficiency.
And so, just a follow-up, so in regard to, set at 100, if the target was 100 and it set at 101 for definition, if your intent is to have 260-watt or 60-megawatt generation plants together for 120, does the regulation need to be 121, or I mean, what's the...
I mean, yeah, you can flex like that. The LM6000s themselves come in at 47 megawatts. And then the typical steamer units are 13 megawatts per LM6000.
Assemblymember Culver. Use your mic, please.
Oh, sorry. The Fairbanks plant they're building at the university, a new coal plant, or is that upgrading the old one?
That's not an LM6000.
Right.
The one I'm talking. Oh, you got a different question. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's not. But I mean, where does that play into the EPA mix as far as regulatory authority, and does it meet the standards? And
the EPA is only asserting regulation over units that are 25 megawatts and larger, and that produce 219,000 megawatt hours per year. New coal unit at UAF is only, its nameplate capacity, 17 megawatts, at least what's been reported.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's a cogeneration unit, they're going to be running it primarily to serve the heat and hot water needs of the university, so it may not even meet that nameplate capacity at all times.
Okay. So that's underneath the regulatory requirement. And then the Wärtsilä's out at MEA, there's 9 of them. Those are multi-fuel, either diesel or natural gas. Now, those aren't the turbines, so do they meet this qualification, and what's the maximum production there?
Well, they are 17.1 megawatts each. And although we have not had a ruling from the EPA, it appears that they are sticking with a per unit interpretation of their rule. And if that is true, then the Klutna Generation Station will not be under the rule.
Assemblymember Culver, this isn't a statewide review of power. It's very interesting, but
we need to know what we're talking about in terms of what 60 or 100 megawatts, what that plant looks like. Because if you're talking a site as big as Eklutna, that's a 40-acre site jammed full of, and that's a huge project.
Well, that one would be 171 megawatts net.
And it's because of this ordinance that it's in Eklutna.
The one that MLMP is currently building, those two steel frame units, the one that is partly enclosed is the steamer unit building, and the one that's not enclosed, this is right next to the Glen Highway as you're going into town. That's where the combustion turbines will sit. That's the size footprint of a 120 megawatt unit or plant.
Thank you, Mr. Walker. It was very, always like to hear from people that know what they're talking about. So, if there's nobody else, please come forward.
Good evening, folks. My name is Mark Masteller, and I also had the pleasure of serving on this group and wanted to follow up just a little bit on what Mr. Tilton mentioned. Number one, I think the important thing to think about in this situation is we're basically saying, this is a relatively rare occurrence that needs to basically have a conditional use. That's the real key to me to what happened with the 8.32 review. So as Berkeley pointed out, we whittled it down, took out a lot of stuff that really didn't need to be in there. But the key is making sure when something like this happens, which is pretty darn rare, there needs to be a public process. And that's why we decided to go with putting this into Chapter 17 or Title 17 for a conditional use process. And I think that's the real important part of this whole thing. So I just wanted to make that point again. And I would hope you would support this action. Thank you.
Anybody else? Assemblymember Sykes.
Mr. Masteller, if you were on the committee, this discussion about size, I find a little curious. I did serve for a number of years on the Rail Belt Energy Advisory Board for the Alaska Energy Authority, and our entire Rail Belt Energy system would be considered small anywhere else. If you're looking at sizes of generating plants outside, one single generating plant would be much larger than our entire rail belt grid. So I just wonder, are we doing something artificial here? It seems like you could have a footprint of, say, a wind farm that might take a lot of land that might be a community concern but produce very clean power. Or we have a proposal up at Fishhook. Earl Osman has come up with this idea to Fishhook Creek, which would use all of the water from that creek, as I recall, and some of the water from the Little Sioux. It seems like that's a community concern, but I think that whole project is less than 2 milliwatts, megawatts, not milliwatts. Boy, that's your hearing aid battery. Megawatts. So are we really talking about the type of power? I heard the word emissions mentioned. If it is a coal generating plant, you've got the transportation and storage and emissions from coal. Is that another? I mean, it seems like we can't have an ordinance that says if you do this, these are your regulations. If you do that, it's these regulations. But I just wonder about this size issue because we're on a lot smaller scale here than they are on the lower 48. Do you have any comments about that?
Well, we did talk about size quite a bit, and I think for me it goes back to different types of fuel have different impacts. And I mean, it's a good point. A 20-megawatt wind farm has a huge footprint, and the community should probably have a voice in that. By picking, 101 or 50 or whatever the number is, I think that what's gotten lost a little bit is different types of systems have different impacts. In fact, at the Planning Commission, one of the planning commissioners pointed out that we went from 50 and 8.32 to 101 in this current situation, and there was a proposal on the Talkeetna River for a 75-megawatt project, which means the borough wouldn't necessarily have a voice. So I think maybe to get at part of your question, we had lots of discussion. We don't want to discourage small projects. We would like to see small generators out there. I think that makes sense, and it's good for our energy security to have that. Different types of fuel take different footprints. If you're fossil fuel with lots of energy density, you can be in a pretty small footprint, but there's still impacts, whether you're at 20 megawatts or 100 megawatts. The other thing I think it's important to remember is that residential systems, they're nowhere close. You know, a 10-kilowatt residential system is a large residential system. That's 100 times smaller than 1 megawatt. So, but I don't know if that answers your question.
I think we're spending a lot of time here.
Well, it's good time, though, because it does relate to what we're going to be deciding, and I appreciate the testimony. And I did sit in on some of the committee meetings, and this committee really worked very hard, and I commend all of the committee members. I was impressed, and I think you've come forward with a very good proposal. Thank you.
Anybody else?
Seeing and hearing none, we will close the public hearing and bring it back to Assemblymember Colligan.
So I move ordinance serial number 14-144, and I would propose that we postpone the rest of this discussion till next meeting.
It would be December 4th? December 2nd. Okay, on the motion to postpone, Assemblymember Colbert.
I think it would be helpful because the testimony we've had about sizing of plants, type of plants, to have a couple experts maybe come in a work session and explain a little bit more. We're learning a lot from two folks that have testified. we're acting on a law that we're not technically qualified to make judgments on size. To me, at 100 or 60, or, I don't feel comfortable just winging it on a number. I was hoping maybe the manager could make available some experts, work session on it for an hour or so before you take it up later in the evening would I think be helpful. Bring in some people that could explain the types of plants and impacts and those kinds of things. Also, the other issue that I think we need to do is a half-mile notice big enough. Maybe a mile is more appropriate, depending on, again, depending on the size of the plant.
Now, on the motion to postpone, is there objection on the motion to postpone? Assemblymember Sykes.
Well, I hadn't thought about it. I wasn't going to object to it, but I thought Mr. Culver raised a good point. Can we, if we can get a session in before the assembly meeting on December 16th, why don't we do that? Because we've already got a meeting before the one on December 2nd. So could we have a work session on, we don't need to take action, we're just getting information, 4 p.m. on the 17th instead of the 2nd?
So is that a motion
to
amend?
Yes, sir.
Okay, motion to amend to postpone to December 16th.
With a meeting added prior. And is that what I'm hearing?
I guess that could be part of the motion.
Say again, please,
Madam Clerk. A work session prior.
Yes.
A work session prior. Yeah. Is there objection? Hearing none, it passes. Thank you.
Bear with me. Let me get this.
Okay.
Okay, I'm ready.
So we are now ready to take up Ordinance 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And that is Ordinance 14, 145, 146, 147, 148, 149. Madam Clerk.
Ordinance Serial Number 14, 145, an ordinance approving an appropriation of $34,552 from Fairview Road Surface Area Number 14 Fund Balance Fund. Excuse me, Fund 271 to Fund 410, Project Number 30037 for Fairview Road Surface Area Number 14, Capital Projects. Ordinance 14146, an ordinance approving an appropriation of $50,000 from Big Lake Road Surface Area Number 21, Fund Balance Fund 277 to Fund 410, Project Number 30043 for Big Lake Road Surface Area Number 21, Capital Projects. Ordinance 14147, an ordinance approving an appropriation of $26,000 for Meadow Lakes Road Surface Area Number 27, Fund Balance Fund 281 to Fund 410, Project Number 30047 for Meadow Lakes Road Surface Area Number 27, Capital Projects. Ordinance 14148, an ordinance approving an appropriation of $46,000 for Bogard Road Surface Area Number 25, Fund Balance Fund 279 to Fund 410, Project Number 30045 for Bogard Road Surface Area Number 25, Capital Projects. Ordinance 14149, an ordinance approving a reappropriation of $21,000 from the Bogard Road Surface Area Number 25, Fiscal Year 2015, Operating Budget Fund 279 to Fund 410, Project Number 30045 for Bogard Road Surface Area Number 25, Capital Projects.
Okay, we have we're opening the public hearing on all of these ordinances to do with our road service area projects. If you have an interest in all of those, we're even willing to give you time to speak. We'll give you 3 minutes on each one. But nobody has signed up at this point. And this is your chance to step forward if you want to speak to any of these projects. Seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing and bring it back to...
Yes,
sir, did you want to speak on these ordinances? Okay. Just want to make sure. So, Assemblymember Colligan, would you move these, please?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. So, I move serial number, ordinance serial number 14-145 and ordinance number 14-146 and ordinance number 14-147, ordinance serial number 14-148, ordinance serial number 14-149, ordinance serial number 14-150.
150 is not in it.
I'm sorry?
That'll be separate.
With our clerks.
So.
Okay.
That's item six through 10. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none. Thank you. We pass those. And now, ordinance 14150. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance amending MSB Title 24, Animal Care and Regulation, by adopting MSB 2407, Sled Dogs and Mushing Facilities, and by amending MSB 2405010, 2405030, 2405060, 2410, 20, and 2440, 50.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. And, I see some names here I recognize. We have Dee Dee John Rowe here. Welcome to our chambers.
Hi, got that turned on? Yeah, I really appreciate this opportunity to share with you guys how much it means to me that the borough would be attempting a unique opportunity to protect and to advance the treatment of sled dogs in our borough, and to acknowledge the relationship that we have had for so many years, much prior to statehood, with the dog that's been the companion and opened up all of Alaska, but that you would put in an ordinance a definition of what quality sled facilities and allowing us the opportunity to maintain our kennels and our passion as we see more and more development in the borough. Now, I have lived in the borough for since 1987, but I have been running dogs for over 40 years. I started when I was living in Western Alaska, and I have definitely seen that there's been a huge improvement in the care and facilities that are provided for dogs on a regular basis for our sled dogs. And it's my desire to see that improvement continue. And I believe that this ordinance is really helping to design the framework for the quality facilities that I think we would like to see all sled dogs have available to them. Because we know that there is a low denominator and a high denominator. And as far as I'm concerned, my dogs are my family. I keep them from the time I plan them as young dogs till they die of old age. I have regular veterinarians come into the kennel, have their hands on each and every dog. All my vaccination program is documented and has been for over 20 years. You know, I have a genetic plan for my dogs, and I can give you the genealogy and all the dogs that have come through my kennel and that have stayed in my kennel, matured, and have, in some cases, some of them are not racing dogs. They are dogs that are just staying with me because they might have flaws and are unable to be racing dogs, but they have a place in my heart. So I appreciate very much the opportunity to speak positively towards the effort that you are making to define a quality facility for all sled dogs in the borough. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for your service to the industry. We've got Sim Smith, followed by Justin High.
Hi. I'd just like to speak in favor of this.
State your name for the record, please.
Jamie Smith.
Oh, okay.
Everybody calls me Sim. Anyway, I just want to speak in favor of this. I feel important that the sled dog industry is supported. There's a lot of regulations out there. Very few are positively supporting our sport, which is the state sport. It's a major hobby for a lot of people, but it's also a major business in this state for a lot of people. I pay my taxes with money that I make, racing sled dogs, raising sled dogs. I have sold sled dogs all over North America and in Europe. And I'm just a small fry. I know there's people who have much wider markets than I do. But it is a significant area of commerce for a lot of people in the state. People are hired as handlers and as mushers and as kennel managers, and it is our state sport, long tradition in this state of being more than a sport, being something that people do as a profession, and they make a living doing it. And I just really want to say I think this is a positive step in having some an ordinance out there with some things in it that actually support the sport and the business of raising and training racing sled dogs. Thanks.
Thank you. Justin High, followed by Jamie High.
Hi there, I'm Justin High. I'd first like to thank Assemblyman Halter for writing this ordinance and bringing it out to you. Mushing has brought my wife and I to the Mat-Su Borough from outside. We are now property owners and kennel owners. I'm also a manager of a company in Willow that sees a large economic influence from mushing and mushing sports, including dog sled races, launching spot for mushers, and along with Iditarod spectating. And we see a significant economic influence from those sports. I also see the egress of outside influences in Willow. We live in a traditionally a mushing-friendly neighborhood, and in recent years we've seen trails being blocked and derogatory signs posted against us in our own neighborhood. I also believe that protecting the traditions and the lifestyle that so many of us have came from the U.S. and around the world here in Mat-Su Borough is vital. Thank you.
Thank you. And Jamie, followed by Michael Baker.
Hello, I'm Jamie High. I came up to Alaska in 2008 to handle for Didi John Rowe. I have been mushing for over 20 years, so an opportunity to work for Didi was huge for me. In 2012, I ran Iditarod, and so having this ordinance specifying, you know, about these sled dogs, I think is very important. As Justin was saying, we have our own kennel now, and we've had influences from neighbors that don't agree with our lifestyle, but mushing has been a part of Alaska's history for how long? And, you know, defining what a sled dog actually is, I think, is a great thing. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Baker, followed by Jamie West. Somewhere along here, we should get an Iditarod story.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Michael Baker. I'm here on behalf of Matthew Fahler for 17th Dog, as well as myself. I was brought to this great state of Alaska because of dog mushing, and I am for this amendment. I really hope to see the quality of the sled dogs and everything stay as is and progress. And I just wanted to say that. Thanks.
Thank you. Jamie, followed by John Wood.
Good evening. I'm Jamie West, and I'm a member of the Animal Control Advisory Board. And I will be speaking tonight representing the Willow Dog Mushers Club. And to start off, I'd like to tell you our mission statement, and it's to protect and preserve the dog mushers' historical way of life today, tomorrow, and for further generations. We support this amendment. The governor signed a bill making Alaska recently a right to mush state. It's this year, and it doesn't give the mushers the protection to mush, nor have dog kennels. We need that protection to exist. There have been legislation that hasn't worked. An example, Anchorage, that gives the number of minutes that a dog can bark. Dogs don't have the schedule down. And there was an exodus from Anchorage by mushers. The Spud Special Use District in the Kinnick gives some protection to kennels but hasn't been as successful as the originators thought. It pockets them in. There are several reasons that the sled dog is different than a regular dog, and one of which it provides transportation. Just the type of transportation that took people into the interior of Alaska. They're sled dogs, they're not pets. They are for transportation now and then. So we want to let you know that Willow Dog Mushers does support this amendment, and we thank you very much for your support.
Thank you. John Wood.
Is it on?
Yes, it is. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Assembly members. My name is John Wood. I'm currently the chairman of your Animal Control Board, hopefully for not more than the next month and a half, which I resign and go do some other things in life. But we were asked to take a look at some of Halter's proposal. We were not asked to either favor it or oppose it. We would simply offer our suggestions and critique, which we did. And I believe Assemblyman Halter changed his ordinance to reflect most of those changes. The board did not take a position on the ordinance itself. I will testify here in a second as to what my personal opinion is. There were some individual members that had some objections and concerns with some of the specific provisions, and if they wish to raise that with you, they certainly can, but it was not a board-approved action. Now, speaking as a personal basis, I've mushed dogs for 24 years, and I'm not an Iditarodder. I'm a sprint musher or a stage racer. But nonetheless, if you take a look at the economic driver that this industry provides for you, it's immense. I would only hope that most of you get a chance to come out to my kennel, come over to Assemblyman Halter's kennel, and see the kind of investments we've made in the sport and in the facilities. When I first bought the land out here in Willow, it had nothing but junk cars bordering in front of it, 85 to 100 of them, which I paid to remove. And now we've built two houses on that facility. And we have mushers that come in from Michigan each year on one of the houses which they've purchased. We've had handlers from Japan, Israel, Czech Republic, Hungary. I could go on. It's an international sport. If we play our cards correctly, we can be the center of that. And we have all of the natural surroundings to do it in. We only ask that we get some help from you folks and allow us to do what we do best. There are a lot of great things in this ordinance, whether you're talking about tethering, whether you're talking about recognizing that the sport is a year-round training facility, needs the ability to run on four wheels, et cetera. There's just a lot of good things. I don't see any bad coming out of it whatsoever. Most important to me, regardless of the specifics, it's reaching out by this body to the qualified mushers out there that want to take advantage of this escalated quality control system. And it's a recognition of everything that we contribute to this community. I would hope that the press would start looking at that when they have news stories about what I call dog collectors having problems with malnourished dogs, etc. Because most of the cases that I look in the newspapers have nothing to do with mushing. They have to do with collecting animals. And I'd love to be able to see facilities such as would be recognized here covered by the press. I'd be happy to answer any questions. You'll see more of Title 24 here in a not-too-distant future, I suspect.
Your board didn't have an issue with calling dogs livestock?
The board did not. There was an individual member that did.
Okay.
Yes.
I saw that on Facebook.
Yes.
Anybody else? That's all that signed up. Please come forward.
Hello, my name is Sabrita Holland. I'm a local veterinarian. I happen to also be on your Animal Care and Regulation Board, but I'm speaking just personally. I was raised in Petersville in the Upper Susitna Valley, And I am a veterinarian currently working in this area, so I'm pretty familiar with sled dogs. And there's just one section of the ordinance that is concerning to me as far as a practical sense, and it exempts, well, maybe I should reword that. It allows for yearling and young dogs in the process of training them to be loose on public lands and in public areas for the purpose of their training, to learning to run with the team. And there's no limit to the number of those dogs. And the rabies compendium does say that when the dogs are involved in their mushing activity, that they don't have to have a rabies tag on for identification. So in theory, these animals have no identification, and there's no limit to the number of them. So there could, in theory, be basically a pack that is assumed to have voice control by the musher out on a public land. And if I were a family walking with very small children with the family dog in a public area, or on my horse with my child also on a horse, I'd be quite concerned meeting up with a bunch of loose huskies that might not listen to voice recall, being that they're puppies a year old. So I'd just like to have this addressed, that that's a realistic concern, that there are other people that use these trails. From the time I was a little kid, my horse and I shared the trail with the mushers. Totally fine with that. But expecting young dogs in training to be on recall when there's kids on horses, little kids walking, and other people's family dogs there, I'm not sure is a wreck that we really want to see. So thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Please come forward.
Mr. Mayor, Mr. Manager, Assembly members, my name is Patricia Rosnell, and I wasn't intending to comment. However, I noticed this raises another issue of what appears to be conflicting Assembly goals of maintaining a historical lifestyle, maybe similar to the Wild West, and wanting to move into the international field of development, international commodities trading, and such like. So I wanted to note that, but I also have some specific questions. I was just looking at the 2015, our current year budget, and I guess my question would be, how much will this cost, and where will the funds come from? I see there are zero compliance officers listed in the current budget. And so I'm assuming how would we ensure compliance? We already have major issues with trash and junk, noise. If we want to change our reputation, and if we want to be fair to the dogs that we intend to protect and support under this code, how will we do it? How will we pay for it? And actually, how will we respect the residents whose taxes are going for it? Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Please come forward, sir.
Okay, I won't speak very well because I get carried away, so I won't get it in if I speak, so I'm just going to read some stuff.
Yeah, you need to state your name first.
My name is Bud Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I just looked in the dictionary and saw one definition for agriculture, and that is, it's the culture of land, or the cultivating of land and raising animals.
Are you wanting to talk about dogs? Or?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
By that definition, in prehistory through the present history and the traditions, it's the first and oldest and most continuous form of agriculture, raised dogs. If that's not enough, there's commercial use. that have been mentioned, the tourism industry, what the Iditarod does in the winter, what they do down in the on the glaciers in the summer. When I was homesteading myself, I disked my fields with dogs, with a two-horse disc with an extra long tongue, and I've hauled logs for my cabin and houses, three houses. There are businesses like everybody sells dogs, but there's the business of people are gathering compost and building compost. I call that agricultural too, because that's building soil, and that can be done with the dogs too, and is, for sanitation and for agriculture, obviously. I've done tree farms where you take rides out. It's a sort of a tourist thing, but it's seasonal, Christmas time. I generate electricity with them. I've used them definitely for the protection from predators and for my livestock. Speaking of traditions, too, come to think of it, back to them. Anybody who hasn't worn dog fur mitts or tasted soup in many houses doesn't have the perspective to realize the import of food and agricultural self-sufficiency in Alaska. That is, you can't eat a dollar bill. No way. That if the borough has one thing that they could do, it would be to help agriculture, whether it's by making sure it doesn't turn into or get developed into gravel, or add to it with dog mushroom. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Seeing no one rise, we will close the ordinance and bring it back to Assemblymember Halter.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to adopt ordinance serial number 14-150, and I'll speak to it for a few moments if you...
You certainly may.
First of all, I appreciate everybody coming and testifying tonight, and you probably noticed in your packet there was quite a few emails and things of people supporting this, and... this ordinance, you know, I guess it is kind of self-serving on my part. I've been a dog musher for many, many years. Changed over from an attorney, which not quite sure why I did that. But it's been a proud profession for me. And the sled dogs are the oldest, well-used animal in the state of Alaska. And I guess it just, for the borough, I think we'd be one of the first jurisdictions in the United States that I could find on research that it would enact an ordinance like this, kind of setting sled dogs aside, apart from regular dogs, how to manage them, how to manage kennels. To have good kennels, to have a good Iditarod race, you need good kennels. And, of course, Matsu Borough, I think, had at least 20 or 25 entrants in the Iditarod Trail sled dog race and Yukon race last year. The current champion is from Willow, Dallas Seavey. Of course, D.D. Genro, what have you run, 35 Iditarods or some nature, something like that. But you have to have good, solid kennels. And my thinking is that this ordinance will make good, solid kennels well into the future as the population grows. You can see the distress. We're lucky. We do have growth. I really appreciate that. At the same time, I want to see kennels survive. And this is my way of trying to craft an ordinance that will allow that. And there's Dr. Hollins is correct. Now, that problem you were talking about, or that thing about free-running dogs, I do a lot of that. But that'd be 2405070, restraint of animals. Now, we could fine-tune that with the ordinance that's following on Title 24. And believe me, I'll work with Matthew Beck and Mr. Wood, we can look at that, because that would be a concern. As soon as I listen to you, that would be a concern. Dogs do have to have microchips and identification if they're properly licensed. So maybe now there is a little bit of lack of enforcement there. But the right to mush resolution to pass the legislature this year was a really big deal to me. The governor signed it. It kind of is a policy statement about what sled dogs mean to the state of Alaska. And of course, the Mat-Su Borough was home to the biggest sled dog race in the world. And we do have a lot of different types of people using sled dogs. There's sprint mushers, like we have won a lot of those. Eagle Ellis and a lot of mushers in the valley have won a lot of that sprint racing. So I just want to continue that into the next generation. I'm 65 years old, turning 66. I don't have any children, so this is not really about me. It's about the next generation or two of mushers. And I tried to make this ordinance, and I want to thank Lisa Richards with our staff attorneys. I guess she's retired now, but she helped me immensely wording and writing this and working through the situations. And maybe it's not perfect, but you do have to have a three-year license just to apply for this. You have to have a history, infrastructure. Unattended kennels cannot apply for this. And so it's just not, have a bunch of dogs. That's not what this is all about. You could be a recreational kennel, though. You could be a sprint kennel. You could be a long-distance kennel. That's irrelevant. We just want to have a history. And I wanted to speak to Ms. Rosnell, said something about enforcement. I actually think this would make it easier to enforce the kennels that would actually license under this, so you'd spend really less money, to tell you the truth. That's my personal opinion. I guess we'd have to leave it up to staff. We could address, I guess in tight budgets, you have to address your issues of how you enforce code and things like that. And believe me, I'm not opposed to having people under this ordinance. You would be open to inspections. And to apply for this license, you'd have to be inspected. You'd have to have your rabies certificates and everything like that. Tethering is an issue down the lower 48 where people want to stop tethering, period. Well, if that was happened in Alaska, that would basically stop sled dogs and sled dog kennels, really, tell you the truth. And I've tried other forms, pens and things like that. So there's just little things in there, year-round training and things like that are important to survival of kennels in an aggressively growing population area, and that's the Mat-Su Borough. The definition of sled dogs as far as livestock, legally, I think without sled dogs even listed in that group, they probably meet the definition of livestock already. Not probably, I'm sure they do. I guess, personally, I don't think llamas should be livestock, but they probably are. So this just would add sled dogs as kind of to that list of farm animals. And so I would ask my fellow assembly members to pass this. We will be working on the second bunch of Title 24 coming up. I think I'm not sure what the status of it is as far as the Animal Control Board. John, it's in the hopper. So we'll look at that issue, Dr. Holland. Believe me. And so that's all I have to say, and thank you.
Assemblymember Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm in general support of this ordinance, which is an amendment to Title 24, something that Assemblymember Halter and I, and as he stated, former borough attorney Lisa Richards, our assistant attorney, we've been working on this on and off for several months. And I agree that there's a lot of work that still has to be done to this. I think we haven't addressed yet density, how many dogs per square foot would be allowed on a facility. We haven't talked about setbacks with regards to property lines, roadways, well heads, water, bodies of water. I think we definitely ought to address the issue brought forward by Dr. Holland that Assemblymember Halter has agreed with. I think I would like to comment too. I think this would be a self-enforcement in many ways, because I think if you're in the dog mushing community and this is adopted, which clearly the dog mushers would like and they want, and I encourage my assembly members to carry it forward tonight, they'll self-enforce one another. If you're not abiding by these, I think you'll just be kind of worked right out of the community of dog mushers and not allowed to participate in those activities, probably amongst the mushers themselves. So that's my two cents. Thank you.
Mr. Mayfield.
I have a couple of friendly amendments to the ordinance. So I'd like to move that we amend Ordinance Serial Number 14-150 Section 24.07.10 in A, to read as follows. This chapter applies to all areas of the borough outside the cities of Palmer, Wasilla, Houston, and any other future incorporated city. That would be my first motion.
Should we just put Big Lake?
Possibly for the future, but we'll leave that aside.
Okay. Mr. Attorney, could you address how do we know what's future?
543.
Mr. Mayor, Assemblyman Rayfield, if another city incorporates, this ordinance would automatically cease to function because animal care control regulation is a non-area-wide power. So we don't have the power to do it inside of a city. So should a new city form, this would simply go away as it pertains to all the land within that new city. It would be automatic. We would have no power to do otherwise.
Would the entire ordinance be stricken
for example,
from borough?
No. For example, if Big Lake incorporates,
right,
you don't have to say this doesn't apply in the city of Big Lake. As a matter of state law, it would not, and we would lack the ability to do anything with it. The day they incorporate, this wouldn't apply. Now, they could enact their own if they wanted to, but we wouldn't be able to, just like, for example, fireworks. We couldn't prohibit a new city from popping up from selling fireworks, another non-area-wide power.
Thank you. That actually clarifies it for me, sir.
Do you wish to withdraw your amendment?
I'll withdraw the motion.
Okay.
However, I do have another amendment.
Okay. And the clerk tells me, by the way, there are amendments, but there are no such thing as friendly amendments.
Oh, well.
Just for your education.
It's meant in a friendly manner. Let's put it that way. I move to amend Ordinance Serial Number 14-150, Section 24.07.060, Section B. It's indicated on page 552 of the packet to delete the word road, R-O-A-D, in the two places that it occurs in that section.
Do you want to speak to it?
Certainly.
So we know what context you're talking about.
Yes. Basically, the ordinance in that section says that it shall be lawful to tether or fasten sled dogs to a kennel, dog truck, or dog transport trailer within any road. And I'm concerned about that, not only for the safety of the dogs, but the musher, as well as the legal liability of somebody on a motor vehicle traveling down the road. So I do think that the remaining sections, do adequately cover right-of-way, trails, trailhead, public places, that kind of thing. But I am concerned about, it's specifically stating that a dog musher has the right to tether or fasten their dog sleds to a vehicle in the middle of the road.
And you're all right with street?
I don't believe that it says street any place.
It does. There.
Yeah.
You could say and street.
I would amend my motion to delete street also.
Okay. Assemblymember Halter.
Well, there's two situations here. Now, the common thing when you're thinking about pulling into a trailhead or you're pulling into a parking lot or you're pulling off like a rest area alongside the park's highway or something to get dogs out, put around the truck, water, feed, they do their thing. That's very common. I think that's what this section is talking about. And then training sled dogs on a roadway, a trail, a easement, that's a different story. I think there's a Section 5 of Alaska Administrative Code that specifically allows horse-drawn carriages, animal-drawn carriages, vehicles, on roadway, in formation, in our case, it'd be training purposes. So I would object to that. I don't really have any problem with taking road out where you take your dogs out of a truck, out of a thing like that. I would not object to that, because that does make, you know, that would be a safety issue. So, but if you're saying you can't train on a roadway, a subdivision road, a legal easement, or something like that, which is quite common for us, I would be worried about that.
Now, this is strictly about tethering in this section.
This is around the truck?
Yeah.
Then
uh-huh.
I don't mind.
Okay.
I don't know what. Okay.
Further discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none. Thank you. Are we ready for the question? Is there objection to the ordinance as amended? Seeing and hearing none, congratulations and thank you, Mr. Halter. Are we ready for a break? Okay. Let's come back at 8:45. We will pick up where we left off, and that would be number 12, Ordinance 14151, Madam Clerk.
An ordinance reappropriating $1,600,000 for a portion of fiscal year 2015 designated legislative grant projects from the Alaska State Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development from Fund 400 to Fund 430, State of Alaska, to provide 50% matching funds for Borough Transportation School Access Bonds, Project Number 40201.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. Does anybody wish to speak? Hearing none, seeing none, we will close the public hearing and bring it back to Assemblymember Culligan.
I move ordinance serial number 14-151.
Thank you. That's all it takes. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none, it passes and takes us to ordinance 14-152.
An ordinance accepting and appropriating $178,281.57 for a portion of the grant funds from the Alaska State Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development for the Department of Emergency Services fiscal year 2015 designated legislative grant projects with accompanying resolution 14-103, a resolution approving the scopes of work and budgets for a portion of the Alaska State Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development grants for the Department of Emergency Services projects.
Thank you. This, too, is a public hearing. Does anybody wish to speak? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing, bring it back to Assemblymember Culligan.
I move ordinance number 14-152 with accompanying resolution 14-103.
Is there discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none, that passes. Brings us to ordinance 14-153.
An ordinance accepting and appropriating $68,420 from the Alaska State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management Grant Program to fund 425 Project Number 45158 for Emergency Operations Center Software and Incident Command System Training with accompanying resolution 14-104, a resolution approving the scope of work and budget for the Alaska State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management Grant Project Number 45158, Fund 425, for Emergency Operations Center Software and Incident Command System Training.
Thank you. This, too, is a public hearing. Does anybody wish to speak? Seeing none, close the public hearing. Bring it back to Assemblymember Culligan.
I move ordinance serial number 14-153 and accompanying resolution serial number 14-104.
Is there discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none. Approve again, once again, it's a lot easier to spend money than it is to pass policy. Ordinance 14-154.
An ordinance accepting and appropriating $13,476 for a portion of the fiscal year 2015 designated legislative grant projects from the Alaska State Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development for the Soapstone Road Upgrade, Project Number 30044, Fund 410, accompanying resolution 14105, a resolution approving the scope of work and budget for a portion of the fiscal year 2015 designated legislative grant projects from the designated Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development for the Lazy Mountain, Greater Talkeetna, Fairview, and Greater Butte Road Service Area, project numbers 30041, 30049, 30037, 30036, Fund 410. The accompanying resolution 14106, a resolution approving scope of work and budget for a portion of the fiscal year 2015 designated legislative grant projects under $50,000 from the Alaska State Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development in the amount of $150,000 for the Lazy Mountain, Greater Talkeetna, Fairview, Greater Butte Road Service Areas, project numbers 30041, 30049, 30037, and 30046.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. There's nobody signed up. Does anybody wish to rise? Hearing none, we'll close the public hearing. Bring it back to Assemblymember Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to move to adopt ordinance serial number 14-155 and resolution serial number 14-106.
Thank you. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none, that passes. Brings us to 14-156.
An ordinance authorizing the borough to incur indebtedness in the principal amount of $3,060,343 from the Alaska State Department of Environmental Conservation Clean Water Fund for the closure of Central Landfill Cell 2A, project number 25052, with accompanying resolution 14-107, a resolution accepting the scope of work and offer of loan funds in the amount of $60,343 from the Alaska State Department of Environmental Conservation Clean Water Fund for the closure of Central Landfill Cell 2A.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. Nobody signed up?
6 and resolution serial number 14-107.
Thank you. Is there discussion? I've got a question, Mr. Manager. On is this a loan then? It says we're incurring indebtedness from the State Department of Environmental Conservation. Oh, Mr. Dolan.
Yes, sir. Terry Dolan, Public Works. It is a loan.
Good interest?
Yes, sir. It's like 1.5%, very cheap money.
Okay. Thank you. I don't remember that happening that way before. It's the only reason I ask. Mr. Attorney.
It's because generally loans are illegal. The only way this is legal as... Well, the only way it's legal is, as I wrote on the IM, it needs to specify in the loan document itself that the only thing paying back the loan is the enterprise fund. And then it's treated like a lease revenue bond. And then it's legal.
Okay. Thank you. So this, well, that's, yeah. I'm going to look into that more. So... Is there discussion? Did we close the public hearing?
I think you did, and then I think you went, and then we started asking questions, but I think Assemblymember
Beck moved it, yes. Is there any objection to this motion? Sorry, I threw us off rhythm here. This brings us to Ordinance 14-157.
An ordinance accepting and appropriating $7,500 from the Alaska State Department of Education to Fund 480, Project Number 20364, for continuing education grants at the Big Lake, Sutton, Talkeetna, Trapper Creek, and Willow Public Libraries, with accompanying Resolution 14108, a resolution approving the scope of work and budget for continuing education grants from the Big Lake, Sutton, Talkeetna, Trapper Creek, and Willow Public Libraries.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. Nobody signed up. Nobody wants to speak, so we'll close the public hearing and bring it back to Assemblymember Halter.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll move ordinance serial number 14-157. Call a question.
Okay, there's been a call to close debate. Is there any objection? There's no objection to closing debate, so is there any objection to the ordinance? There is none. That brings us to Ordinance 14-158.
An ordinance amending MSB 5.25140 to adopt a name change from Wasilla Lakes Fire Service Area to Central Mat-Su Fire Service Area, and adopting a name change from the Wasilla Lakes Fire Service Area Board of Supervisors to Central Mat-Su Fire Service Area Board of Supervisors.
Wow. Does anybody wish to speak to this? I'm opening a public hearing. There's nobody signed up. And nobody rises. We will close the public hearing and bring it back to Assemblymember Culligan.
So I move ordinance serial number 14-158. And a quick comment, I'm glad to see that we now have defined Wasilla as the center of the borough population. But thank you.
Okay. Is there further discussion? That Assemblymember Sykes.
Well, I read the IM, and the reason that this is a huge population area, but I just have a couple questions. One is, why the name change? And two, is the name change going to kind of cause confusion? Because I thought that having the lakes description in there was pretty clear, and now it's become Central Mat-Su, and it's really lakes, and it's like, I don't know. Can anybody answer why this is a good idea?
Yes. Somebody back there with a blue shirt should do that, yes.
Chief Steele's coming forward and will answer your question, sir.
Excuse me. Mr. Mayor, Assembly members, this was actually brought forward by the Wasilla Lakes Fire Service Area Board of Supervisors. And one of the main concerns was just the confusion. Once Big Lake and Meadow Lakes merged, they became the West Lakes Volunteer or West Lakes Fire Service Area. So the acronyms are exactly the same. So it's WLFSA. So for years, our fire service area has basically operated as the Central Mat-Su Fire Department. So they're just bringing forth that change.
Thank you. Assemblymember Sykes.
Well, I thank you for the explanation. I'm not opposing this, but I was just curious. Thank you.
It's always nice to know there's a reason. So, discussion? Objection? Hearing none, that passes. Welcome to the Central Mat-Su. Ordinance 14-159.
An ordinance amending MSB 1539050 and MSB 315215 in order to remove term limitations for the Board of Adjustment and Appeals and Board of Equalization.
This is a public hearing for anybody that wishes. Nobody signed up. Nobody's coming forward. So we'll close the public hearing and bring it back to Assemblymember Culligan.
I move ordinance serial number 14-159.
Thank you. Discussion? Assemblymember Sykes?
I have a couple questions about this. The justification in the informational memorandum was that they're having trouble finding people to stay on this highly specialized board. So I would like to know what efforts this board has made to replace vacancies and how that's done.
Well, it's done by mayoral appointment, and I've been unsuccessful at bringing new people to it, but there, to my record, there has never been a full board on either one of these. There's just a lot of vacancies, so you kind of hate to start ditching the few you have.
Well, I can relate to that. The two terms that I chaired the Ethics Board, I don't know that we had a full board for most of the time that we did that, and yet we always managed to have a quorum. We always managed to get the work done, and the answer doesn't convince me that all of the efforts that have been made could be made. I mean, we have We've had a transportation fair to talk about transportation and get people involved. Why don't we have a citizen advisory board fair and invite people to fill the boards and commissions? We do have a lot of unfilled seats. So my kind of feeling is that I thought the ethics board was a pretty highly specialized board, and that people had to kind of have a very serious interest in it to want to serve, and that may be true with the BOAA as well. I guess what I would rather see is that if we really have a problem with vacancy, we have actually, there's two issues. We haven't met the board of, salaries and emoluments, or emoluments and salaries is supposed to meet every 2 years, and I don't think they've met for over 5 years. And I don't think they have anybody on their committee, but they're supposed to have a function. We got rid of the Real Property Assets Management Board, and I learned Saturday from the agricultural meeting that we started with an ag board, and then it became an ag forestry board, and then it became the board of Real Property Assets Management Board, which included all of those things. And now we have these issues coming before us where we don't have what I consider to be critically needed advice. And so now we're saying that we want to empower a board and not have term limits. And I have a real serious problem with that, because I think that I don't see that we have a problem yet. If we don't have enough members to have a quorum, that gives us really the opportunity to advertise this in a very wide manner and say, we really need expertise. And maybe that would be kind of a blessing to get some fresh experience in. We can't keep trying to keep the same people on board forever, because we're all going to die, every single one of us that's sitting here. And we need to replenish ourselves as time goes by. So I'm not convinced that this is a good idea, and I can't support it. It just doesn't make sense on any level.
Thank you. Assemblymember Mayfield.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm sensitive to the fact that we need to fill our boards and have citizen involvement in government. However, I think eliminating term limits is the wrong way to do that. We need to infuse new blood into our organization, and we really need to avoid the perception of kind of the good old boy type network. People act on their perceptions, and so I think it's just a kind of a bad policy to eliminate term limits. I guess I would like to offer my assistance in looking for other remedies to this other than eliminating term limits. And perhaps the entire assembly may want to join in that effort, but I just don't think eliminating term limits is the right way to do it.
And this is only on these two boards. But I am going to, everybody that votes against this, I'm going to require you to get me a recruit.
Okay? I'll try
for each board. They've got to be good enough for me, yeah. Assemblymember Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate your effort to fill our boards and keep qualified people in good positions. Is there anything preventing us, other than this measure, is there anything preventing us from a body, if the staff could tell me, from just coming forward? Let's say that someone brings it to our attention that one of the members' term limits are coming up. Is there anything preventing us from an assembly of wavering that and making an exception and allowing them to stay on the board longer? Just a simple action here to say, I move that this person's term be extended for another term and we make an exception. Is that against the rules?
Well, yeah, it's against, this is the remedy for that. But if there's another one, Mr. Spropoulos, could you speak to it?
Right, so you have some boards with term limits, some boards without. So for the ones that do have term limits like these, this is the remedy to say, you know, they can continue on. Another remedy, you couldn't do it in the manner that you said, just kind of move it on the vacancy report. You'd have to run a non-code ordinance and say, notwithstanding the term limits, the assembly finds that, you know, they decide to extend it. The danger in doing that is kind of you could get into issues of how are you deciding who to extend and under what circumstances. I would start to get concerned over time if there's a pattern that develops, for example, that, you know, people of certain races are extended when other people aren't, people of certain income brackets are extended when people aren't, people of, you know, certain areas are extended when other people aren't. You could run into de facto discrimination claims.
Yeah. If you really feel strongly about term limits, we could eliminate our road service areas almost immediately because a lot of those people have been there a long time. Assemblymember Sykes. Oh, Culligan. Assemblymember Culligan.
Yeah, I just want to mention, you know, there's lots of drama and discussion that can go on about this, but there's certain boards that we have that actually take skills and experience to effectively manage and do those duties. And I know what my skills and my wheelhouse are, but I wouldn't insert myself, because you really know you made it in politics when you've got detailed opinions about subjects you have no experience or skills in. It's kind of a comment from Dennis Miller one time. But I think it's reasonable in a few of these cases that it's hard to find these people. They have conflicts because they're profession, but we need people with professional experience to participate in those boards. And I would ask that we look beyond the drama a little bit and figure out how to, at least in the short term, solve this.
Assemblymember Sykes.
Well, I'd just like to follow up on Assemblymember Beck's concern. If it seems to me that if they boards couldn't reach a quorum, it could be a problem over a certain period of time, and then you could, if somebody had served their term out, allow applicants who had served to apply and make an exception. But I believe that the vacancy needs to occur, and there actually has to be a problem before you are going to actually say that you should allow this. And I don't believe we've actually seen that.
Actually, one of these boards, that's why we're doing what we're doing. I can't say for sure which one it is, but it will not have a quorum in January, and these people have reapplied. I don't see my vacancy person here to tell me whether I'm lying or not. Mr. Mayfield.
Mr. Mayor, again, I'm sensitive to the problem of filling boards. And I really, I just have an innate distaste in my mouth about eliminating term limits. But I'm to the point where I want to propose that we postpone this until the next meeting so that we can look at either revising the terms of the boards or making some other accommodation.
Okay, there's a motion to postpone. Do you want it to be time certain or do you want to kill it?
December 2nd.
Okay.
Yeah.
December 2nd. On the motion to postpone, Assemblymember Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was going to speak on something else, but since the motion's been made, I'll speak in favor of the motion and offer my support and looking at this, if you'd like me to.
Thank you. Is there objection to postponing to December 2nd? Hearing none, we will see it on December 2nd. That brings us to Ordinance 14160.
An ordinance approving subdivision of an 80-acre parcel into two 40-acre parcels with conveyance pursuant to settlement agreement, MSB 000539.
Thank you. This is a public hearing, and we have Mr. Wells signed up. Welcome to the chamber, former assembly member. Now push the button there, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Assembly people. My name is Rob Wells. I'm one of the owners of this parcel. I'm just here to answer questions. It's pretty straightforward. Member Beck has an amendment that all the owners are in agreement with, and I want to thank Glenda and your planning staff. I was thinking, I've been around this borough for 35 to 40 years, and I've never been on that side of the counter, you know, doing routine things. And great staff. I knew it before, but it was good to experience it. And I want to take this opportunity to thank the mayor and assembly people for hosting the Ag Forum you did last week. Obviously, there's some issues, and I'm glad to see some movement and to get more input from the community. And that's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you. Anybody else? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing, bring it back to Assemblymember Culver.
I move ordinance serial number 14-160.
Thank you. Is there a discussion? Assemblymember Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to propose an amendment which is handed out to everyone, and for those who are looking in the audience, it's on the first page of the ordinance. It involves the last sentence in the first whereas, where we would eliminate one containing the home site from the parent parcel, and we would add instead at the end of that each to contain 2.5 acres of the available 5-acre home site with fee simple potential and no ag rights, only home site, semicolon, and an additional whereas that's inserted, Title 13 allowed for the purchase of 1 5-acre fee simple home site with approval of the assembly, period. The 2 2.5-acre home sites could be purchased fee simple and subdivided with application and fulfillment of requirements for survey, comma, fair market value appraisal, comma, an appraisal price paid to the Matanuska Susitna Borough, semicolon, and then it would continue as the code is currently written with the other whereases and such.
Okay, do you all follow that? Assemblymember Sykes.
I have a question of clarification. When you state that the parcel can be subdivided, are you referring to the parcel being subdivided from the agricultural parcel into a whole 2.5-acre parcel, or are you talking about subdividing the 2.5-acre parcel into smaller subdivisions?
Assemblymember Beck.
Thank you. May I defer to the staff for that, please?
Mr. Mayor, real quick. Through the chair to Mr. Sykes. So,
Assemblymember Culver, you may.
Thank you. So, Jim, the code allowed for 1 5-acre site. So we're creating 2 ag parcels, 2 40-acres. So it allows each owner to have half of that 5-acre rights for a home site. And then if they want to have financeability of that home site, then to perfect the deed to fee simple, own all rights so you can finance it, and it's a separate parcel with a separate legal description, so it's financeable for home construction. That's the whole idea, is to make it more sustainable. It was very unclear, and there's in the covenants and this ag sale, for instance, when we had our farm forum, I think you were here, one landowner had a set of covenants that had 12 covenants on it. No, the staff had 12 covenants that was in the file, and the owner had one that was 10 that was a recorded copy. So people were thinking that the staff was thinking different terms than what landowners, and so this makes it real clear. The intent was there to allow the home site, and so then the home site will be available on both parcels within the original parameters of not to exceed 5 acres. So the only reason that they subdivide is to just explicitly have that 2.5 acre site, you know, for a home site, different title than the ag land.
Assemblymember Beck and then Assemblymember Halter.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd just like to clarify that the ag rights remain on the other part of the property that's not being pulled out here.
All right. Assemblymember Halter.
Well, I guess my question is, so you could sell a 2.5 acre separately from the...
No.
You cannot sell it separately from ag. So that all of it's got to go together. It sounds
Mr.
like you've got to be simple on your... home that you could fee simple means fee simple, doesn't it?
The idea being that you could get a loan. So a bank is not going to loan on
I know.
An undescribed, and if they don't have collateralized with all the rights, forget it, you're out of pocket. And so
I understand that. I'm all for that. I'm just
it's tied to the home site as a part of the ag parcel.
So you can't sell one separately. You can't sell the ag parcel separate
no,
from the home site, or the home site separate from
part and parcel of the deal.
That's guaranteed, 100%.
We got staff that can tell you this.
Yeah, please answer that because I don't know the answer to that.
Glenda Smith with Land Management, and under Title 13, if they choose to subdivide the 2.5 acres. From the rest of the egg parcel, they can sell it separately. And that's, you know, that's occurred simply from Elgin's parcel before.
So my question now to staff would be, so now on this other egg parcel, you can't have a home site. There's no legal way to have a home site on the, you're going to sell them separately, correct?
There aren't any designated at this point, no.
So
they would have to come back to the assembly if they sold it and... As for an ag rights only.
Okay, that's a pretty important question. Assemblymember Sykes.
Well, I appreciate Assemblyman Culver talking about this, and I do understand what he was talking about, but I still feel like my question wasn't answered. I was confused by the language of the amendment, and I wanted to know if the 2.5 acres that is set aside for fee simple could be subdivided, or if it was simply being subdivided from the agricultural parcel. It seemed to me the language was, all right, well, then that, I would like that clarified.
And what the intent was, as the applicant and I talked about it, was to allow 2.5 acres to be subdivided from the 40 acres. There's one 80-acre parcel now. They want to subdivide into two approximately 40-acre parcels with two or one each 2.5-acre home site on each 40-acre parcel.
Okay, that's I support that, but that isn't. It wasn't clear when the amendment was read that that's what it meant. That's all my. That's my point.
That still didn't answer your question, though. That 2.5 acres could be divided at least once again. Mr. Spropoulos.
Knowing what I know about the ag program in the Mat-Su borough and the way this language is written, there should be something written into the agreement that says no further subdivision is allowed. Because the way I would interpret this language would be one 2.5 acre home site to be subdivided off of the ag parcel. And that's it.
Right. And once there's a fee simple title, you can do what you want under borough law, which would allow you to go down to 1 acre. Anyway, just so we understand what we're doing.
I would read this that the borough would put a clause in there saying and you can't subdivide it further. It'd still be fee simple. It just wouldn't be fee simple absolute.
And that could be done at the time if they actually chose to purchase a fee simple. Nobody's applied to do that yet. So that's kind of a different process, and they own the ag rights at this time. What has been done in the past is that they've been given a deed that says they now have the development rights and merge those two titles into one fee simple. They could restrict it at that time so that it couldn't subdivide any further.
Right. These are issues we've got to work through downstream, and part of what the forum was about and what the board will be about. Assemblymember Culver.
Okay, so what we're doing is we're creating the authority for two 2.5-acre home sites on the ag parcel with the same rights that the ag land has. We haven't severed the title, or we haven't created any fee simple. So that's one thing we're doing here, is we're taking the 5-acre allowance and allowing each, approving the settlement agreement to create two 40s with two home sites. B, we are allowing the home sites to be deed perfected for a fee, whatever the fair market value is, to increase that to fee simple, whatever that would be based on appraisal, and then subdividing out the 2.5-acre tract. So the thing we need to get clear with the petitioner on record is, A, were you opposed to a prohibition on further subdividing the 2.5-acre fee simple if perfected? And B, do we have those two titles must be sold or conveyed as a pair? So you cannot just sell out the home site without selling the ag right. So that would be probably the way to handle this. So if Rob would approach through the mayor and address that and see if that was okay with you, I think that the assembly would probably be comfortable with going through with this and we get it on record. Yeah, we'll have to make an amendment, but it would be helpful if the petitioner would address that.
No, we need to. Is there objection to suspending the rules? You want to speak to that, Rob?
Mr. Mayor, Assembly Members, Rob Wells for the record. First, let me state that I do have a power of attorney from all the other three petitioners, if you will, speak on their behalf. Number one, we've owned the parcel since 1977. We've never tried to break out the 5 acres. I don't know that either party could afford to. But since I'm one of the parties that's going to the new place and may have to get some financing, I knew this was a tool available. To Mr. Culver specifically, I would agree no further subdivision below the 2.5. I'm on record. And I would also agree that, and the way I understand code, and this is one of the things to be addressed in the Ag Forum, is there are no parcels smaller than 40 acres. And so by virtue of us being at that level now, that would make a 37.5, and that would not satisfy. So I'm agreeable to both those concerns. At the end of the day, we do need to preserve ag land, and more importantly, we need to find some people to farm.
If we could take a brief at ease to work with Nick on that language.
Do you need time?
Mr. Mayor, I don't think you have. What you're doing here is you're granting administrative authority to the manager,
right,
through staff to execute these documents. And the only way this comes back to you is if there's a disagreement amongst the parties. It sounds like everybody's in agreement. And the parameters of what you're granting here are actually wider than what they're doing. And the recourse would be to have an interim evaluation of the manager. They gaff it.
Just to backtrack, because I mean, what we found is if we don't have a good written record, then we don't know what we did 20 years from now. I think it's important that we put in the resolution that on the ordinance that you can't sell the home site. It goes with each 40. They're attached. And B, you cannot further subdivide down either parcel, basically. I mean, you can't go smaller than 40. Well, you're going to be 37.5. So we're okay with the 37.5 net, but the 2.5 won't be further subdivided. So.
And the clerk keeps the audio for all time now, so this entire discussion
Well, Lonnie, help us with a little bit of language here.
The attorney's saying that you don't. Your administrative intent has been expressed, and
they're not wanting a second.
I think the attorney's saying that unless there's objection at this table to what's been said, it will be on record and it will be the manager's direction. Madam Clerk?
Looks like Mr. Spiropoulos is writing something.
Oh, he is. Oh, he's going to defeat what he said then?
And to avoid another interim evaluation, I'll make sure this is done exactly as you requested.
Can we come back to this after audience participation? Is there any problem with that? There's no objection. We're going to move into audience participation. I don't know. Do we have a sign-in sheet? We do. We have Eugene, followed by Helen.
My name is Eugene Haberman. I represent myself. The first part is concern about the joint meetings you had between the Borough Assembly and the Anchorage Assembly. In less than 12 months, you've had two meetings. There has been no opportunity for audience participation at both meetings. I raised concern about this prior to this meeting to members of the Assembly here, and also raised concern prior to the meeting that the Borough appropriately placed on the website the agenda for the meeting, but the Anchorage Assembly didn't. So they were blind to what the agenda was. Half the public audience, so to speak, two communities. One community knew, the other community did not know. That was totally inappropriate. This has got to stop. All public meetings, we provide a reasonable opportunity to be heard. Public meetings, it's not being done. I note there's concerns from the mayor of Houston when you first did that, when I caught it in January, and she was quite concerned. I addressed this concern to you and what happened, ignored it, and this has got to stop. There's a lot of things I'd like to say at a lot of these places I'm seeing about questionable irregularities and laws, but footnotes, you're having a meeting. You're having a meeting with the legislature. There's no place for the public to speak. Should have a public to speak. If you're designing it to the public, language here to the public doesn't have to be speaking. That's not appropriate. Open up the public to speak. This is not cool. The other thing is, there's on the item the resolution. You've got destruction of ballots for October 7th election. As you've been warned, that you didn't have canvas board meetings open to the public. They had no knowledge of it. Otherwise, City of Palm Beach and Houston did. I declared that that was inappropriate. I protest destruction of these ballots. Aviation board, ethics board was quite inappropriate. There was just a line there on the agenda that recent meeting where they just said, name and opinion, didn't know what was going on. It turned out to be the aviation member asking for an opinion. Representative of the clerk's office read out something that wasn't out there before the meeting, so we were blind, just an agenda. The aviation board voted after editing it, signing it, and then the public spoke on it. I protested in audience participation. It says the public was blind to what was before the body prior to the meeting, and there was no document at the meeting for them to be handed it, and that they should not have the meeting end without the public getting a copy of it. And the end result was the clerk representative at the meeting said that Mr. Haberman should file an FOI. That's an unwarranted delay tactic. So that concludes my statements, abridged statements from many places I go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I was disappointed you didn't compliment us for not meeting on Palmer's council night. That's all right. I will.
I would have. Can I make a compliment
to
you?
No.
I was going to compliment you on something, you know, but I got to cut my time.
Yeah. Mr. Mayfield?
Yes. You know, I would like to just address one of Mr. Haberman's points. And he indicated that the canvas board wasn't properly noticed. You know, I attended that one day, actually I found it rather slow moving. But, you know, it's definitely a public, you know, the public had the right to attend. They did have to stay behind a fenced area. It's kind of walled off, or not walled off, but fenced off anyways. And that's perfectly appropriate. So I do feel that comment is not quite accurate, Mr. Haberman. So just wanted to address that.
Right, and I've been to those meetings. They're open, but they're not advertised. That's his complaint. And there's legal reason for that. So, this is not our meeting. Anybody else want to speak? Our 8th Assembly Member Minos. Do you?
My name is Helen Minos, Mr. Manager and Mr. Mayor and the Assembly. I just wanted to thank everybody. I don't know whether I'll be, you know, you have a few things to come to yet. But I've really enjoyed working what I've been doing all my life, and I did attend the part of it today, the fish sim, you know, symposium, and talked to a nice gentleman from Fairbanks, Mr. O'Brien, so there's a little bit of Irish in him, too. And we had quite a chat after he gave his address, but he's a very knowledgeable individual. But I sat and listened to a lot of things, and, you know, clean water is one thing that salmon really like. In fact, we all like clean water. And I hope I live long enough to see us take care of you-know-what right here in this valley. And it's not a glamorous subject, but I stuck with it all my life. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And you've all been very helpful. Really. Thank you.
Anybody else? Seeing and hearing none, we'll close audience participation and move back to Ordinance 14-160. Assemblymember Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was able to collect my thoughts and come up with the following secondary amendment for my amendment. Thank you, Mr. Spiropoulos. I'd like to add a whereas at the end. Whereas provisions shall be made to prohibit any further subdivision and restrict transfer of home site without concurrent transfer of the parent parcel to the same owner.
No, he thought of a loophole that we didn't even think of. Okay, is there objection to that? No objection? We now have the motion, the primary motion. Is there further discussion? Is there objection? Thank you. That passes. I thought our last motion was on the main motion.
Sorry, Mr. Mayor. I think I'm tired.
Okay.
I'm not tracking
yep.
as well.
I was saying what you told me, so. So what are our intentions on the consent agenda? Assemblymember Sykes?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I wouldn't want you to be disappointed, but I'd like to remove AM 14-143.
Okay. Anybody else? Madam Clerk, would you read the consent agenda, please?
I will, Mr. Mayor. Resolution serial number 14-109, a resolution amending the scope of work for project number 45066 to purchase multi-purpose ultra-high pressure response units for the Central Mount Sioux Fire Service Area. Resolution 14110, resolution authorizing a loan application to the State of Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, Alaska Clean Water Fund, in the amount of $22 million for design and construction of a septic and leachate treatment and disposal facility. AM 14140, authorization to purchase 5 command and support vehicles for emergency services from Kendall Ford in the amount of $140,018. AM number 14145, award of bid number 15048B to Phillips Scales LLC in the amount of $279,249 to furnish and install commercial scales at the central landfill. AM 14146, authorization to amend contract number 142447 with Hattenberg, Dilley, and Lionel in the amount of $49,160 for additional studies and engineering services for the Yoder Dyke Repair Project, project number 75066. AM 14147, approval of the destruction of ballots from the October 7th, 2014 regular borough election. AM 14148, award request for proposal number 15045P in an amount not to exceed $133,600 to AMC engineers for fire alarm replacement design at Wasilla High School, Palmer High School, Burchell High School, Thielen Middle School, Big Lake Elementary School, Larson Elementary School, and the school district building. And that is it, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Assemblymember Colligan.
I move to approve the consent agenda as read into the record by the clerk. I was asleep at the wheel there for a second. I was going to have them underline in bold where it said Central Mat Sioux Fire Service Area in 14109. I'll let that pass.
Good thing we approved that.
Yeah, there was a little presumption there, but I did notice that. So, is there objection to our consent agenda? Hearing none, that passes. Brings us back to AM 14143.
Approval of the Manuskasitna Borough Assembly meeting schedule for 2015.
Okay, you want to move that, Assemblymember Sykes?
Yes, I move to amend serial number AM number 14143, approval of Matanuska-Susitna Borough Assembly meeting schedule, and I'd like to speak to it.
Yeah, you need to move it as a main motion first.
I thought I just did. I move assembly memorandum number 14-143.
Thank you. Did you have an amendment?
Well, first I have a question, and I look at the schedule, and I look at the meetings in late May and early June, and my question is don't we have a legal requirement to pass a budget by June 1st? Or is there attempt to override a veto if there is one by June 1st, something like that?
Madam Clerk.
Assemblymember Sykes, through the mayor, this is only adopting the regular meetings that are required by code. The budget meetings are usually done in March. They're scheduled in March for later out into May. But these are the code-required meetings.
Okay. My suggestion was just to move the May meeting to the third week and then do away with the June meeting. But if we need those, because that would actually push us closer to this June deadline, and then we wouldn't need special meetings, was my thought. In other words, we would not have a May 19th meeting. We would have a May 26th meeting, and then we would not have a June 2 meeting, is what I was getting at.
Okay, there's a motion to change the May 15th meeting to May 19th to May 26th. Is there objection to that?
I thought he was asking, can I clarify this?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a clarifying question. Didn't you say you would move the June 2nd meeting? I'm confused.
We would eliminate the June 2nd meeting and move the May meeting from May 19th to June 26th, or May 19th to May 26th.
But your motion wasn't to eliminate the June meeting that I heard.
That was my intent. I may have misspoken.
Can I clarify really quickly?
Yes, Madam Clerk.
The motion, just to make sure I have it right, Assemblymember Sykes, is to strike the May 19th meeting and change it to the 26th, and
yes,
also to strike the June 2nd meeting.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Is there objection to that?
I'll object. No real reason. I just don't understand the clerk's. I mean, the budget meetings we're gonna schedule those as needed. So I don't understand why we're tinkering with this. What's the deal?
Well, if we can take care of the budget at a regular meeting, then we can save ourselves some meetings. Was my thought.
Well, we never have in the last 5 years that I've been here. So
it was just a suggestion, but I do have another motion.
Okay.
If this one doesn't go.
Is there further discussion? If there's no further discussion, put your vote on the board for moving the second May meeting forward 1 week and eliminating the first meeting in June.
Mr. May, it failed with Assemblymember Sykes and Culligan in favor.
Okay, we have the original motion on the floor.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to, since that went so well, I'd like to try a second amendment.
Okay.
I thought that we had a pretty good break in July by not having a meeting, even though we ended up having a special one. But I would move to strike the July 21st meeting so that we would not have a meeting between June 16th until August 4th, very similar to what we had this past summer. That's my motion.
Okay. Is there objection? No objection. That went a little better. Now take August and September. Okay, we have the motion as amended. The amendment passed. Is there any further discussion on the main motion? Any objection? Seeing none, it passes. And that concludes our consent agenda and brings us to introductions. Madam Clerk.
Introduction for public hearing on December 2nd, Ordinance Serial Number 14161, Ordinance 14162 with accompanying Ordinance 14163, Ordinance 14164 with accompanying Resolution 14111, Ordinance 165, Ordinance 166, Ordinance 167 with accompanying Resolution 14112, and Ordinance 14168.
Thank you. Assemblymember Culligan.
So I move to introduce legislation as read into the record by the clerk and set for public hearings on December 2nd, 2014.
Thank you. Is there objection? Hearing none. That will be our future business. Brings us to the vacancy report. Assemblymember Culligan.
So for the vacancy report, I move to approve the mayor's recommendations for for the confirmation as follows. Health and Social Services Board, Carol Kaladiko, K-O-L-I-A-D-K-O. For Trapper Creek, RSA number 30, Earl Boone. And for Circle Views and Stampede Estates, Flood and Water Erosion, SSA, Claire Mothershead, the remainder of 2014 term and new full term beginning January 1, 2015.
Thank you. Discussion? Objection? I hear no objection, so the vacancy report is adopted. Thank you. There's no referrals. No, there is a reconsideration. So, Madam Clerk's Resolution 14073.
A resolution approving the state legislative priorities for 2015.
Thank you. Assemblymember Culver, you moved to. Madam Clerk, just to be clear, do we have to vote first on reconsideration?
You have to vote. If you want to make any amendments, you'd have to move to approve the reconsideration.
Okay, so the motion, the question on the table right now is if you're going to reconsider this resolution.
Correct, Mr. Mayor.
It's our legislative priorities. He wants to make some amendments to the rail extension, I think.
Assemblymember Culver wants to do something different.
Oh, okay. So we're opening the whole thing.
No, that's what's going to happen.
That does. I mean, when we reconsider it, we've got it's everything. So, our further discussion on.
Yeah.
Reconsideration.
Yeah, I move to reconsider resolution serial number 14073 and for the purpose of We gave the joint maintenance facility a bit of a haircut, and the mayor of Wasilla wants some of that funding restored in that ask. That's the one where we have the lease for $1 for the fire station in downtown Wasilla that is expiring soon, and they're hoping that we would try to get a new facility. And we reduced that amount to $1 million for design only. And so that's why I asked for reconsideration on the courtesy to him. And then the manager has some language that he's proposed to tune up our heavy rail lift, if you will, that we can then also add. So if the mayor Wasilla has talked with member Culligan, I can hand it off to him. If he hasn't, I can handle it. Okay, well, I would just move an amendment to...
We're debating reconsideration right now. So I did hear one objection, so put it on the board. Yes, opens it for reconsideration. No, doesn't.
Mr. Mayor, it passed with Assemblymember Halter opposed.
Okay, Assemblymember, let's have your motion, your amendment, Mr. Culver.
The joint maintenance facility, restore that to its previous amount. Was it 9 or was it 11 million? Okay, restore that to 11 million.
Take these one at a time. Well, our strategy was to get the $1 million design right away the first year, and obviously we're going to follow up the second year with the construction money. So we're in a short budget cycle down in Juneau, is what I heard.
Yeah, if I could, Mr. Mayor.
Assemblymember Culver.
The capital budget is looking like a big goose egg. We're about 50% of general fund funded right now with price of oil where we're at right now. So we're running about 50% estimated deficit, approximately. So capital money, whether or not it's $1 million or $10 million, won't make a lot of difference. Our real struggle is going to be to get that rail finished. How are we going to do that?
But if we amend this, you'll promise to bring us $11 million?
Can't make promises. That would be a violation of the ethics.
I'm joking. Assemblymember Sykes.
Yeah, well, I just want to speak in support of Mr. Culver's amendment, because even though we might not get anything, the way that legislation works is you put something on the table for people to consider, and so they're thinking about it whether they've got the money right now or not. And I think it's valuable to put there as something we really need, and whether we're paying a dollar or nothing for that Wasilla maintenance facility, it's a real bad deal. It's not a good maintenance facility, and we're going to be evicted. That thing runs out in a couple of years, and so we don't have a big timeline.
Okay, it's a fairly simple issue, people. Is there objection to changing this? There's no objection, so let's go for number two. Assemblymember Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Is this the point? Not yet. Sorry.
Not till the motion, really. Does anybody want to move this point, McKenzie?
I'm a member Beck.
Was that what you were going to do, Assemblymember Beck?
No, I was not. Sorry.
Uh-oh. What are you doing?
Just real quick, I'm doing a paper for her. Fellow Assemblymember.
Okay, well, Mr. Okay.
And there was copies in the back of the room, Mr. Mayor.
Right. Yeah, read it. The clerk will read it.
It's a motion to amend the Port McKenzie Rail Extension descriptive language to read the 32.5-mile rail line extension connecting the boroughs Port McKenzie to the Alaska Railroad Corporation's AARC existing mainline track near Houston is a joint project of the borough and AARC. The project includes a 1.5-mile bimodal loop, one of the longest rail and road loops in Alaska, for 100 car trains and semis carrying bulk materials. The rail extension provides an economic transportation route from interior Alaska to tidewater at Port McKenzie. Rich mineral deposits locked in the interior will have a cost-effective transportation alternative to trucking. Project cargo, bulk resources, and fuel exports will develop further at the Port McKenzie due to the economies of rail. Although dependent on the funding, the project could be completed as early as 2017. Total project cost is estimated at $303.5 million. Remaining funds required to complete the project are $120 million. A breakdown of the request is as follows. Estimated $40 million for Segment 2, estimated $15 million for Segment 5, and estimated $65 million for the ballast, ties, rail, and loop.
Thank you. Discussion? Objection? Hearing none. Congratulations, Mr. Manager.
Thank you.
Now we have the main motion as reconsidered. Mr. Beck, I was just afraid you were going to put another dollar in there.
No.
Okay, good. Is there any objection to this motion as reconsidered and amended? No objection. So thank you. That takes care of our reconsiderations. Assemblymember Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just real fast, I'd like to move to reconsider AM 14-143, and that's the dates of our meeting, and if I could just speak to it briefly. We moved tonight's meeting for my anniversary, which is tomorrow, with my wife, 21 years, thanks be to God. And I just found out, if I had heard this earlier, Assemblymember Colligan has an anniversary on May 19th, and I'd like to, what I'm intending to do, if you'll reconsider this real fast, I'm going to propose that we do move our May 19th meeting to May 26th, just so he can be at home with his wife that night.
Oh, I thought you were thanking God that you weren't going to be home.
You will have no, sir.
Okay.
I don't want to be on the bad side of his wife.
Okay. Is there objection to reconsideration? There is a motion to reconsider. There's no objection. So, Mr. Beck, please make your amendment.
Thank you. I move to amend AM 14-143 to move our May 19th meeting to May 26th. I understand that's the day after Memorial Day, but so be it.
Okay. There's a motion to move from May 19th to May 26th. Is there objection? Hearing none. We have the main motion. Is there any further discussion? Any objection to the main motion as amended? Very good. That passes, and we can be thankful for that. So, Assemblymember Beck, since you're looking out for everybody, would you make a motion to extend the meeting, please?
I motion that we extend the meeting for 15 minutes maximum.
Not to exceed
10:15 p.m.
Okay. Very. Okay. Is there objection to that? Hearing none. So done. That brings us to comments, and we'll start with the manager.
Yes, I would like to have Chief Steele come and introduce our new Deputy Emergency Services Director to you.
Is his middle name Central?
He has to go get that changed.
Yes.
But he's working on it, I assure you.
And a tattoo. Mr. Mayor, Assembly members, I'd like to introduce our new Deputy Director for the Department of Emergency Services, Ken Barkley. Ken comes to us as a recent retiree from 30 years of service in the fire service from J-Bear. He's had extensive knowledge and skills development in not only fire, but also rescue and hazmat. And during that 30 years, he's also served in Chugiak Volunteer Fire Department and also 23 years with Central.
Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Well, thank you for your service.
Thank you all very much.
I've heard good things about this coming forward. You've got some challenges, but I think this is the leadership we need right now.
I really appreciate that, Mr. Mayor. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you all.
Mr. Manager?
That's all I have.
Okay. Mr. Spropoulos, I think we have a major announcement here.
I would. I was waiting for Lonnie to say something, but she didn't. So I wanted to let the assembly members and mayor know that she is the current president of the Alaska Association of Municipal Clerks and will be president for the next 12 months. And big achievement and congratulations.
So it's your turn, Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Mr. Spropoulos, for announcing that, because I wouldn't have done that. But I have no other comments, Mr. Mayor.
You're still going to have time to do our work?
Very little.
Oh.
I'm joking.
Okay. That brings us to comments. Assemblymember Culver.
Well, I just thought I'd brief you a little bit. I went through one replacement of an assembly member on my first term. The Palmer member had resigned, and we had to fill a position. And how that process worked was it was noticed to the public, like in the paper, like with a display ad or something, and applicants were given a date to submit their resumes to the borough by, you know, a couple weeks or whatever, kind of like we did the manager search. And then interviews were held of the applicants, and then the assembly voted on it. I would suggest not doing it in the middle of your regular meeting. Probably be better when you interview them to do a work session earlier. Probably have a little bit more time to ask some questions. But there was questions back and forth to the applicants. You know, when we do a manager hires, we usually have a set of questions that we ask all the applicants, and that might be of some value to get together and have that so that you're asking the same type of questions to the applicants. But that's how we've done it in the past. And good meeting. I thought we were going to be here till midnight. Looks like we'll get out a little bit earlier. I would encourage new members, old members, the AML seems to be getting a little bit more organized and less off on tangents that causes political problems. In the past, there's been some like difference from different positions from our statewide leadership, but there's a lot of value in networking with the other communities. A and B, they put on a lot of good seminars in a small workshop session. Like today, I went to one on the statewide transportation plan and how that's put together and some of the drivers and the federal government and how that affects our dollars. So we probably need a little bit more. The clerk and the mayor attend, but we haven't had a lot of participation by assembly members for a few years. So we need to probably get a little bit more involved. That's about all I have tonight. Thanks. You guys doing a good job, and I'm worried that I'm not seeing much public here. Is it that we don't have anything controversial? They'd show up, or do they not know what we're doing?
It's because we've got such a big room that we don't notice when we're
okay.
Here.
We're meeting on Wednesday.
But I would just point out, before you got here, we did schedule a special meeting to deal with the vacancy, but I would just remind you there is no vacancy, and we've not heard you say.
And I'll be issuing a letter at some point, and then that will probably trigger the process.
We're waiting for that.
Okay, thank you, sir. I won't try to do like some folks. We had a school board member that thought that she could do both jobs, and then found out that didn't work out too well after about a month.
Okay. Assemblymember Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would like to give a genuine welcome to Chief Barkley. I had the good fortune to do an inspection tour of the newly upgraded Butte Fire Department, and we did that with Chief Van Dusen and the Assistant Chief LaRousse, and things are looking real good there, and I look forward to good things from Chief Barkley. So welcome. I mean that. That's looking forward to that. In addition to Lonnie's appointment to being the statewide clerk's officer at the AML, I did have the opportunity to be at the Alaska Planning Association for Lauren Driscoll's award, and she actually got two of them because Big Lake got an award for the small town planning, as was mentioned earlier, and former borough assembly member Bettini was part of that process as well. So, you know, just because you may have had a professional life, it's always encouraged to take that professional life into your community if you can. Recently, I inspected Dike 5, actually, it was before the awards ceremony at the borough. A lot of rock has gone into Dike 5 at Circleview, and I hope it holds up for a while, but basically, if we don't maintain them, they'll wash away, just like they always do. But it looks like a good dike, and they may be considering Dike 6, because in 2005, 30 or 40 acres immediately below Dike 5 washed out in one season. We had a public meeting at the Butte on buyouts. There was high interest. There were about two dozen people there, and the word is getting out. I hope that these grants that we're going after work. I did want to clarify one thing. We did get at the joint meeting, we did get a question. I didn't feel like dealing with it then, but Assembly Member Jennifer Johnston asked about the port and ice conditions. And Assembly Member Culligan responded to it, and I thought he gave a pretty good answer, because I support what we got going on at the port, and I think it'll be good. But basically, some problems. I can understand why she asked, because there were a couple of reports that questioned this. One was written by a Grace Whidbey, who had some very critical information about ice in the port. Another one that was presented to the Port Commission in July of 2013 was written by Brad Keithley, who had some reservations about it, and I found that there were reports asking about icing as far back as 1999 and 2005. So I thought it was a legitimate question. I think we should be prepared to answer those. But I don't want to sugarcoat them and say everything is hunky-dory, because we should face those questions honestly. And so I just wanted to clarify that I can understand the reason that she asked that. I do want to thank the Finance Department in their informational memorandum on this $1.6 million reappropriation. It was mistakenly put into the wrong account, and I appreciate them admitting that. The account was very similar to the one that it was put into. It's going to go towards construction, but specifically to schools, and it was put in a more general account. And I would ask that in the future we just not identify funds by number, that we also identify the fund by title, and it strengthens my resolve to make sure that we actually accomplish getting the borough checkbook online. We've made tremendous strides at transparency, and I think we need to keep that up. Not that that would have necessarily helped identify that error, but I think that the public deserves to know where the funds are going, and if we just give them a number, they've got no idea what that's related to, kind of like the 8.32 Commission. But anyway, I thought we had a great meeting. Thank you all very much, and I wish you all a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Assemblymember Culligan.
A whole lot of comments. I would like to respond to Mr. Sykes' comments, which are do the comments, and I think specifically that Ms. Johnston was referring to, and I did not directly address at that meeting, had to do with allegations that boats were tearing away from the mooring at the port. And in previous years of assembly and with our port director, I'll just put it out there. The previous Anchorage Port Director, previous governor, was in Juneau with a ministry of disinformation about things that happened at our port that were absolutely not true. That's what she was responding to. And in a polite but firm way, I tried to redirect that those were not true. There are, and I think if there are concerns, maybe it's time for Mr. Van Dogden to come back and educate or inform the new members, because we've been through this exhaustively. What the real reality is versus perception, and when the battle of funding was going on, it was pretty vicious. But in that, there is concerns about sedimentation buildup and other things that because of the activity on our side and other things, and I think even those have been addressed. But the concern really wasn't about the icing, like it was about some specific allegations that happened in front of legislators when we were battling out for funding. And Mark Van Dogden and the mayor and Arvin specifically, we had to shove back hard, unfortunately. And but with that regard, I felt that the meeting was successful in that engaging conversation for us to move forward. That I think they're readjusting some of their focus on some of their port of and looking at it as a kind of an enhancement or whatever versus a major build because of the industrial activity on our side. So with that, that's my only comments for tonight, but I very much appreciate the discussion.
Assemblymember Mayfield.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You know, Monday and Tuesday, I spent at the AML conference, and probably the biggest takeaway is how important our clerk is. And of course, that course was taught by clerks. So, but really drove home the point that they really are the workhorse for us. I was truly thankful that AML was there, thankful and gratified actually, for the educational value as well as for the public process. And I really learned a lot there, so I thought it was a great conference. Also, while I was there, I attended the Planners Award meeting, and again, I want to echo Assemblymember Sykes' comments in regards to Chief of Planning Lauren Driscoll. She received a standing ovation, flowers, and an award, and she was truly deserving of the work that of receiving that award for the work that she does. And so, I just want to publicly recognize her. I also want to publicly recognize the citizens of Big Lake for receiving an award, small town award, for the work on the CIA, the community impact assessment that was done in regards to routes, road routes going through that community. It really is a testament to their leadership and their tenacity and their vision that they got that award. So I was just grateful to be part of the process. So thank you, and have a great Thanksgiving. Thanks.
Thank you. Assemblymember Beck.
Thank you. Congratulations to our clerk on her appointment. Congratulations to our new deputy director. I'm excited to work with you, and I look forward to meeting you with you more in person and hearing about some of your hopes and your goals. And just a quick shout-out, we did lose another one of our colonists, Annabelle Chawanek, who was 2 years old when the Colony Project first started, and I'd just like to shout out to the family, our condolences, our hopes, and prayers for you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Assemblymember Halter.
Thank you very much for the support on the sled dog ordinance tonight. That was something very important to me, but I think it'll support the borough in many, many ways in the future to come. The electrical generation really amazes me. I learned a lot tonight, and I hope we could learn some more. Trying to set the megawatts for a CUP process is pretty interesting, and I need to get a grip on that, where that number should be. And first I thought we should go lower, then it was higher, and I'm not sure where I am right now, so I'm interested in that work session a lot. So thank you very much, and I want to thank Meadow Lakes folks for always coming into these meetings. Les, Sherry's sitting here, and Patty were here. They've been showing up just like the mayors from the city, so I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Well, on behalf of Assemblymember Arvin, he texted me last night in the wee hours from Mongolia and told me he would not be able to attend tonight. But he was thinking about us. I would mention, I want to talk about term limits, first of all. I'm sympathetic with your concept about term limits. But let's be consistent. If term limits is not all right for some of these specialty boards that meet infrequently for, pretty random reasons, why are term limits not all right for these road fiefdoms. Because there's a lot more power, a lot more direct involvement, everything. I mean, all the dynamics are there. So when you're thinking about this philosophically, just think about it, because I don't know why we shouldn't be consistent. I also wanted to mention, at some point there was mention out of the joint meeting with the meeting in with Anchorage Assembly that there's an effort to consolidate our services, our mass transit services. I will say, to the credit of our transportation coalition, I went to a meeting because the state DOT requested them, after a lengthy study, to eliminate the public services down to one, so that they're not being so the dollars aren't being divided up. And this board met, and of course there was so it was a pretty tense meeting, but they came to the conclusion that they were not going to divide or belittle the services that are being rendered already, some of them on a volunteer basis by the private sector here in the borough. And they are working with specifically People Mover or Valley Mover and Mascot to form a common board. They're giving them all the expertise and everything, and this everybody's agreeable to it. I'm really pleased at how that's working out. That was it's one of the good things that's happened around here. I am getting a lot of calls and suggestions on what we can or should be doing about the new marijuana initiative. I'm looking forward to a briefing with our attorney to know what we can and can't do. And until then, pretty much just keeping my mouth shut, because it doesn't do much good to dream out loud sometimes when comes to these things. With that, I will say that this is one of the few times I've been to AML when I didn't see a single other assembly person. And for that matter, there was only one legislator out of all the right across the board, the whole legislature, there was only one person there this morning when AML opened, and he was from Juneau. It was Senator Egan. So people are tied up pretty much and involved in transition in the new legislative session, and this is also something we need to have our eyes open to, looking out for our interests in this transition period, because there's a lot of dynamics there that could leave us out in the cold as far as fish and game, as far as DOT. Those are just two examples of areas that we rely heavily on state goodwill. And I hope, you know, we need to have our ear to the ground. If you see a chance to get plugged in, do. With that, that's all my comments, and if there's no objection, we will adjourn the meeting.